kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you?
I'm dead.
That's good.
So I guess I'm all right. Yeah. You know, it's a low bar at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a fun show lined up today. Later on in the episode, we're going to be chatting with our friend Maze Dude. He has a new music project to talk about on Kickstarter that's going to be coming out later this year. So that should be a fun conversation. Are you looking forward to that?
I am. It sounds interesting. I'm curious to see what he's cooking up.
Yeah, it's going to be some good stuff. And then I think we might have some Maze Dude music to play later on in the show. We'll find out. But to start off the show, we have some guests joining us. First up, making an even number show appearance, Purnell's here.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Mr. Purnell. How are you?
I'm feeling decadent. I'm drinking decadent Coke with water.
I find this entirely unacceptable that Purnell is infringing upon my even numbers.
Hey, what can I say? I was told there'd be cupcakes. I wasn't going to turn that down.
Somebody lied to your whore ass.
Come on. No, that's not true. They're in the mail, right, Joe?
Yes, obviously. Also joining us, the lovely Serlina is here. How are you doing?
I am doing swimmingly well. Thank you so much for asking. And when I say swimmingly, I say that because it is so humid. Every pore on my skin is just releasing liquid. It's just gross and disgusting, and I hate my life. But how are y'all?
Yeah, sounds sexy.
I'm feeling that humid too right now. Like I caved and hit that AC, and I don't want to, but it's sometimes it has to happen.
The humidifier. Have you ever had a humidifier?
I have one, but I've only ever put it to use in situations of like trying to remove dampness from a basement. But
okay. So you know the grossness of the humidifier when you have to empty it. And when you realize that all that water was in the air, it's like mind blown. But it feels so much better with it. So, you know.
And it's like dirty water sometimes. Like, the hell? Dirty water in the air. What is this?
It's gross.
So just to clarify, you guys are talking about a dehumidifier, not a humidifier.
You know what? Nobody asked you for your input on this, okay?
I was just very confused why you were talking about a humidifier when you're complaining about how humid it is.
Well, you maybe it wouldn't be so humid if we just turned our humidifiers off.
Back on sweat.
That's the problem.
Oh, man. So, Serlina, you were here for a purpose. You asked for some time on the show. The world is in a state of chaos lately, and you wanted to discuss things. So I'm going to give you the floor. What do you have to say, and what would you like to talk about?
I did ask for this time, and thank you so very much for granting it to me, Joe Cam. Also, I find it incredibly interesting that both myself and Purnell are both on the show, so it's like double darky. Is that how that works?
I mean, I figured you wanted to talk about this subject. It would be good to have Purnell here as well, so I guess.
Certainly doesn't mean
although I don't think I can say that.
She is strong on her own. But thank you, Purnell, for being here anyways. I appreciate and love your... Anyways, so, yes, the world has gone to shit. I'm pretty sure everybody has either seen or heard of the deaths that are going on with George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Tony McDade, and really the list is damn near endless of black people, men, women, trans being killed by the police force that is sworn to protect and serve us. I am not here to comment on their deaths. Their deaths are indisputable facts at this point. I am more here to comment on what we can do as a gaming community. So I'm sure a lot of you already know that the gaming community is a bunch of apathetic people. We really do not care about a whole lot except games and Doritos and Mountain Dew.
And don't you shit talk Mountain Dew.
Sometimes in the same cup. Nasty.
I did Mountain Dew is nasty. I will shit talk it. Come on. Back me up here. That shit is gross. It is
I think you're alone. I think you're alone on this one, Cole.
I agree.
I will take my cane and stand on my motherfucking soapbox and say it with my god awful accent that, how much ass you put in it, Mountain Dew tastes like piss water.
I just love that you said, I don't care how much ass you put in it. So apparently there's a secret formula where you dump certain amounts of ass into products.
Yeah, put a little ass on it. It tastes
better. If you had encroached on even number shows before, you would be aware that I say ice. Like ass.
Jesus. Yes, Mountain Dew is gross except for Baja Blast, which is nectar of the gods. But anyways, moving
on. Carry on. Preach it.
It takes a lot for the gamer needle to be moved. And I get it and I understand it because the gaming community is kind of sort of mainstream right now, but really it started out with a bunch of social outcasts who they all came together because it was like, hey, don't you like games? I'm like, fuck yeah, I like games, but no one else likes us. Okay, that's cool. I like you. And we just keep it moving from there. But, and I think everybody speaking and listening can probably agree, especially when it comes to multiplayer games, the community as a whole is a dumpster fire.
Yeah. I haven't played online with strangers since Halo 2, because fuck that.
The last time I played online with strangers was Overwatch, so definitely a little bit more recent than you, Pernell, but the feeling is mutual. I fucking loved that game. I still have love in my heart for that game, but I can't play it because it's just, it's gross and it's disgusting. But I wanted to really say that in my personal life, many people have been reaching out to me and saying, Surly, what can I do? What can we do? Okay, fine. Here's what you can do as a gamer, which is pretty simply, do not tolerate racist shit. If somebody is on the mic and they're saying a whole bunch of racist shit that I am not going to repeat because I don't need to repeat it. Everybody knows the words that are not acceptable and they're not acceptable anywhere. Do not allow them to continue. There's been so many times where I've been called every single thing but a woman of God, and I'm not even a woman of God, but that doesn't matter. The point is, I have still been called these names, and I'm having to defend myself alone. And I shouldn't be alone, because we are all social outcasts, because we love this medium. So, speaking up is the first thing. Blocking people is the next thing. Do not tolerate racist shit in your video games, people. The third thing is holding these video game companies accountable. This is probably going to be a little bit of the news, but I'm going to get into it anyway. A whole bunch of companies have been coming out saying that they support Black Lives Matter. They support the black and brown people who are employed in their companies. All three of them. Bullshit. Fuck that. Hold them accountable.
They support dollar.
Exactly. Oh, you have all of these black employees? Is it more than 10? Look at all the video games that are coming out. How many of them have had white, male, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant main characters? Is with that the main chins. Characters in our lives? Sure, it may be for some of you, but for some of us, not so much. Some of us, we want a beautiful, buxom black woman to be leading the charge or whatever. hold these companies accountable. And there have been quite a few companies that I've seen on, like, the Twitter, because I'm on the Twitter very much, like Behavior. They do Dead by Daylight. They released a statement. EA released a fantastic statement, and y'all may feel what you want to feel about EA. We all have problems with EA, but their statement was tits up awesome. Not only did they say that they were going to support, they proved it by saying, we are giving $1 million to these companies.
Well, that's awesome.
That's good news.
Yes, they did. And it was fucking awesome. And I was like, okay, EA. But that's just two, you know, and it's, I'm sure as this snowball continues to go, because it's not going to stop for a while. Not this time. I don't feel that. I think more and more companies are going to speak up. But y'all, we spend so much time and money with these companies. We need to hold them accountable.
If I can interject for a moment and back you up a little bit. One thing I would also recommend too is familiarize yourself with your favorite games, their in-game reporting systems. I am notorious. Anybody who knows me, who knows that I play Rocket League and Call of Duty, know if I come across somebody with an inappropriate clan tag or an inappropriate club name, gamer tag, I report that shit till my fingers fall off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so easy to do. It takes just a few seconds of your time, and it helps clean up your community a little bit at a time. And it does matter. I have gotten on to Rocket League a day or two after having reported somebody and had a notification that, oh, this account was banned because of your report. This club was forced to change its name because of your report. So they do tell you. Yeah, they do pay attention to things like that. Call of Duty did announce today as well, Infinity Ward, that they would be increasing their in-game reporting systems.
Infinity Ward has been under a lot of fire with
because Call of Duty has it bad.
Yes. Yeah.
And Rocket League too. Like, you wouldn't think. You would be like, oh, it's Rocket League. But, you know, Studa and I, obviously, as both a female gamer and a black male gamer, we get a lot of shit when we're playing Rocket League constantly. And that's not even just club names, but like in-game chat and stuff. We report it, every one of it. I'll take screenshots. I have been on Twitter and posted screenshots and tagged the Psionics and been like, this isn't the kind of community you want. You need to do shit about this.
You're 100% right, Cole.
You have to raise up. It's not enough to just be not racist. You have to be anti-racist too.
You have to fight.
Damn straight, Cole. So. It is a fight. And you know what? Even as a black woman, there are still little thoughts that creep into my head, and I have to actively be like, you know what? Nope. Mm-hmm. That thought is not cool. It doesn't matter what anyone's skin color is. The system that we live in still perpetuates racism.
Oh, for sure.
We all have to actively fight against it. And this is just everything that I have said requires very little effort as a gamer. Mm-hmm. Very little effort. Report people, call out racism, don't allow it in your parties. If you have a gaming friend, and a lot of people have done this around me, and it kills me. You're in a little group, everybody's like, oh yeah, there's this one dude, he's cool to play with, but he says some crazy shit. And you're like, oh yeah? What type of crazy shit? Racist shit, because you get to hear and see this dude, and everyone just tolerates it. No, that dude needs to be booted out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Do not allow it. And don't let these companies out here give a cookie-cutter statement. You can see a cookie-cutter statement because they miss some words in it. They might say the word systemic, but they're not going to say systemic and racism. You're not going to see that phrase. They might say systemic issues. What is a systemic issue? I have no idea because there's so many of them. Right now we're talking about systemic racism and police brutality. If you do not see that in a statement, it is bullshit and their PR team needs to be fired. Also, if you do not see the word black, B-L-A-C-K, five letters, pretty simple. If you don't see it in a statement, it's bullshit. You might see the word African-Americans. I'm going to be honest, all right? I'm not an African-American. I've never been to Africa. I'd like to go one day, but I'm born and raised here in the States. I'm black, and it's okay to say black.
It's all
okay,
I
guys,
say.
It's okay to say black. It's fine. You're not going to offend me. And for the people who are actually from Africa, like, Africa is a whole motherfucking continent with a lot of countries inside of it. So they don't really say that they're African American either. They might say that they're Nigerian American, or they might say that they're from South Africa. So I just need you guys to also be aware of that as well.
Isn't that the reason why we even get the term African Americans? Because of the general idea, understanding that we came from there, but we have no knowledge of our history because of many, many years of slavery and just literal lost history. So that's why we don't even get anything beyond that. So, like, black is fine, like you said, for that specific reason. It's just that
it
is
also,
our history.
Eliminates other cultures that are black as well, including Dominicans, Haitians. So,
exactly, Cole. Exactly. That's a great point. Black is a race. It is not my nationality. My nationality is American.
Filipinos are another one off the top of my head, but
exactly.
There are more than just, you know, Africans or African Americans. It's a skin tone, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and finally, just to wrap this up, because I know I've taken a lot of time, and again, thank you for the platform. Police brutality, while it disproportionately affects black people, it affects us all.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of us.
I'm going to tell a story that I have never told publicly before.
Really?
My husband, which is a lot because I'm an open book. My husband was pulled over after going to pick up some of my medication. Now,
I know this story.
We all know I'm on a lot of fucking medication, including opioids.
Mm-hmm.
So I am on Norco, small dose, but I've been on it for years. My husband was pulled over. They saw the prescription bag in the seat beside of him. Rural Kentucky has a serious opioid problem. It's just the way it is. Rural everywhere in the U.S. has an opioid problem at this point. But given the condition I have, it's literally all I've got that can help me. But we don't even have cops in my town. We have a constable. He's elected. He has no policing history whatsoever.
He's just a guy who's like, I need authority.
He literally used to be a dog catcher.
Wow.
Because that's elected too.
That's funny.
Oh, God. But
he pulled David over and he saw the prescription bag and he asked to investigate it. Of course, he saw what it was and he took some liberties with what was going on. Pulled David out of the van, called for another constable to come back him up. And long story short, my van got torn apart. It got impounded. David spent a night in jail, and he got sucker punched in the kidneys and burned with a cigarette.
The fuck?
What?
So if you think that police brutality is just something we protest or we complain or we bitch about because it only happens to black people and only Black Lives Matter, no, it's something that affects everybody. And it's something that needs to be stopped overall.
Actually, I'd like to add something to that point, too, because it factored into a conversation I actually had with someone yesterday, which drove me nuts. So a friend of mine posted one of those memes, the thing that uses like a bunch of photos to get a point across with quick imagery. And the image was a person holding up a sign saying, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And the guy is angry to the right, says, what about all cancers? All cancer month. Yep. And it did that for cancer, did it for lives, of course, and two other things. I don't even remember them off the top of my head. So this guy's friend shows up and he goes off on this line of, well, I just feel like this thing is not accurate. And he tried to throw some random stats out there about how like police brutality is not disproportionate to black people. It's actually very widespread, blah, blah, blah. And long story short, there was a huge argument between a bunch of these people and this guy. Richard, I jump in there and just said, hey, man, you are totally derailing this entire conversation and missing the point by a mile. You should really step back and reevaluate your point of view on this. And we went through a dialogue, and this dialogue got me to the point of trying to get him to realize a few things. One being which the idea that when people say Black Lives Matter, it's a very simple concept where there is a baseline that you would like to have everyone at. Like when you talk about marriage equality, you would like every citizen to have access to marriage because it is a American right. That's what we have. You can do that here. Just general aspects of things. You have the right to certain things, but there are elements of society where other people get the short end of the stick. They go below the base. They're swimming in the pond when everyone else is up on the dock. So the idea of saying, you know, Black Lives Matter, the idea is that you are reaching down into the pond, pulling black people out of it and getting them up on the dock with everybody else. So when you think of it in that manner, no one's being excluded. In fact, if you genuinely feel you're being excluded, that means you're lucky because you're clearly not as bad off in that circumstance. And then I tried to follow up and say, if you're concerned about police brutality, which he should be because it is a real problem, like you stated, Cole.
Yeah.
This is a time where everyone can work towards the exact same goal. Like, we want to stop police brutality. It came about in discussion because it's disproportionately affecting black people. But if you cut down, if you come down on police brutality and shut it off, everybody wins. This is not a, well, guess what? Black people aren't getting hit anymore. Now they're going after the white people. Like, no one's doing that. No one's doing that. And it would never happen. And the sooner people realize that this is not an exclusionary thing, this is a thing that everyone should care about as human beings, and that everyone wins when this succeeds, the better off everyone will be. No one's getting left behind. There are no victims here. It is literally a movement meant to only help, not to hurt. And this, I just wish more people would understand that, because even at the end of that dialogue I was saying I have with the guy, he was acting like he was coming around. He was getting it. He was getting it. And then he just came back at the very end and said, well, I just think more people would be on board if it was more inclusive. And I was like, here's 20 freaking articles right here of freaking Koreans bombing White Lives Matter groups, of a guy in D.C. who's not white, who brought in a bunch of people, many of which also weren't white, but also weren't black, into his house to protect them from a freaking police raid. It's like, tons of people get it. Tons of people are on board, but this guy needs to be inclusive to be on board. Like, no, stop that. Stop it. So, but I just wanted to get that out there because I think there's probably a ton of people out there that have that exact same experience, and it's just something that needs to stop.
Agreed. Agreed. And finally, if anybody who's listening, like all three of you who are listening, if you feel if you feel some kind of way about it, my DMs are open. My Twitter hashtag is Serlina83. My Twitch profile is Serlina. My email is Serlina83@gmail.com. You can hit me up. I'm around, okay?
Sounds good.
And she's around.
Well, are you happy? Did you address everything you needed to address? Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
Are you dismissing me?
No, not at all.
Did I miss something?
No, I'm just making sure. I don't want to cut you off early and move on to news, and you'll be like, I wasn't done, motherfucker.
No, I said finally. I got to make sure.
Actually, I have a point to add that I think she might be interested in hearing, get some a second take on it, too.
See, when I check, it means more people want to talk. Go ahead, Pernell.
Wait a second, motherfucker. We weren't done.
So, this comes up a lot, especially recently, because like my area has like this whole politicians feud going on and everything about it. But So, as everyone knows, since it was a large part of why this dialogue happened in the first place, there are a lot of protests taking place, some of which lead into not go a little beyond protests, some of which end up being riots, whatever. And if you go to a variety of different forums and whatnot, you'll find people who are generally doing a few things. One, they're doing that thing that humans love to do, which is pick a side and argue against the other. Just flat out. They just take some side and they yell about it. Like, these darn rioters, they're just ruining everything. Somebody needs to shut these people down. Or, oh my God, it's just these freaking officer jokes over here. They need to shut these fuckers down. But it's only like that side aspect of it, like just choosing sides and ranting. And the other part of it is the fact that in the process of doing this, people don't want to acknowledge why any of this is happening in the first place. Mm-hmm. So something I've been trying to point out to a lot more people lately is the fact that when you get a protest going, what usually ends up happening is someone who wants to organize it will just spout a place and a time, and a bunch of people who see that place and time show up. There's no agenda. There's no one taking a head count. There's no one, you know, confirming identities. It's just, we're here. Let's make some noise. And what typically happens is eventually, for any number of reasons, something goes out of line. Somebody might, a police officer might step over the line, do something fucked up. Or a protester might just say, fuck this, I'm sick of it, and just throw something. Or someone who's just there to fuck things up, and for no other reason but to fuck things up, will start on the process of doing exactly that. Which then usually results in chaos breaking out, and bad things happening, and everybody's fighting. And that's what happens, which then gets us back to our usual argument between the thing. And there's a weird dichotomy about the idea of, like, I don't want people smashing up businesses and destroying people's livelihoods and the like. And the reality that a number of people need to understand is that deep down, no one wants that. But the reason why it happens is because that's what happens when people get so angry because things just aren't working, that it has to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And in this instance, it goes into society. That's why people smash it. There's no one sitting down on the corner tapping their foot going, which building am I going to smash today? No, they're not doing it. It's just, fuck this, I'm angry. There's a thing, break it. And they're going to do it. You know? So, but no one truly wants that. It's just, this is what it is. This is what's happening. So ultimately, the thing people need to realize is that is through this these actions, these anger-fueled, frustrated actions, that people are acknowledging these people are really fucking angry. Something needs to be done. You notice the guys are getting arrested, getting their charges bumped up, all kinds of shit's happening because flat out people aren't sitting down this time. They're doing shit, and that's what's making this movement seen. These actions are where I'm making it seen. It's happening all around the world. I read somewhere today, this is literally the largest civil rights movement in history. World history. Something that no one's ever seen. And once everything's settled down, once things have been moved into play, and once we're moving towards, you know, whatever's going to be on the other side of this, what people need to remember is that what we really need to have taken away from this is an understanding that whether you hate the rioters, whether you hate the police, da da da, this whole thing started for a very specific reason. Because black people are getting killed for no goddamn reason.
Yeah.
For none. And they're being killed brutally at that. How about making moves in our system to prevent the thing that is making people angry enough to have protests, which lead into riots, from ever happening again, which means clean up our fucking legal system. Simple as that. And that's something that, quite frankly, no one, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, etc., because I can't think of every fucking thing. But that is something that no one should have an issue with at all. Like, seriously, if someone has an issue with that, please write in the SML or something. Be like, this is why I don't like the idea of our legal system being cleaned up, because I need something to just stare at. So, because there's no argument against that. We all win from it. So don't lose sight of the prize. Don't lose sight of why we're here, and don't lose sight of what will get us back here if we keep fucking up. That's it.
Very well said.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Apparently, it started storming outside, so apparently it was like, whoa!
Yeah, it's been storming here, too.
I hate you all. I need rain, please. Please rain.
Yeah, I'm genuinely happy about this rain. This is that rain that shows up when it's clearly too hot and too humid outside. It's like, it went from being nothing out there to like trees shaking and rain just like spouting.
That's not good rain. That's sticky humidity rain. Gross. Ugh.
No. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, but if I stand out in it, I'm going to still be wet. I'm going to feel good. Oh my God.
Well, should we move on to the news? There are a couple of things that we need to talk about news-wise this week. Is everyone ready to move on to that?
There's been news?
Yeah. Today, the 4th, June 4th, Sony was supposed to have their big PS5 reveal event this week. They postponed it, saying, quote, "While we understand gamers worldwide are excited to see the PS5 games, we do not feel right now is the time for celebration. And for now, we want to stand back and allow more important voices to be heard." Do you guys agree with their decision to do this?
I respect it.
I do. And it's funny because I did read that, and it goes back to what she was saying earlier about how gamers react to things and how apathetic they are. Because I don't know. I'm the type of guy who's like, there's tons to do. I am not really itching for new game news as long as it doesn't just one day stop and never resume. You know, just when it happens, it happens. But people were acting like they'd lost their dog or something. They're like, hey, we're going to push this back a bit for a more important thing. Oh, fuck you, Sony.
Yeah.
What the hell, man? Like, did you need that in your life? The world's going to keep turning, buddy. Just hang on a couple of days. It's not going to hurt you. But this is what people were doing. It was ridiculous to even see. But
what I hated the most with this were all the Xbox fans coming out and making fun of Sony for this. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Here, here. Like, when Joe says it, that means something.
That's a stain on not just Xbox gamers. That's a stain on gaming in general when you come out and you say some ignorant shit like that.
Like, yep. Are people still doing this whole console war thing?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It'll never die.
I mean, okay, listen, I am not rich, but I got a Xbox, I got a PlayStation, I got a Switch, I got all that. You know, it's like, I get it if you can only afford one, but there's no reason to shit on the other one just because you have brand loyalty, which in gaming is fucking stupid anyway. But, yeah. I mean, honestly, that really...
Even back when I did only have one system, I was all about championing my system. I was never one to piss on someone else's. I just championed mine. Like, because to me, that element of the quote-unquote console feuds is fun. It's like, oh, man, Super Nintendo has so many colors. It's amazing. You see all the colors on this thing? And then someone that owns a Genesis will go, yeah, we don't have colors, but our sound chip, man, our sound chip is the shit.
I prefer Super Nintendo sound.
Sega was the shit, though. No, Sega sound chip was the shit. It was.
I wasn't a fan of Genesis sound chip. I wasn't a fan. I thought it was too harsh on the ears.
I don't know. Toughen up your ears, Joe Cam.
I'm a pussy. I can't help it.
Thing there. Like, my blob was always that I felt like it took the right composer to bring the magic out on the Genesis. But when they got it right.
Yeah, when they got it right, it was really fantastic. Right. But more often than not. I thought it wasn't as good as Super Nintendo sound quality, but when they nailed it on Genesis, they absolutely nailed it.
Oh yeah.
I can agree.
I'll also
there.
Say, like, if you had to compare console releases, like for example, I think Zombies Ate My Neighbors. I think it's funny how we actually are going into a console queue, but like, Zombies Ate My Neighbors, the soundtrack on the two systems, I always gravitate towards the SNES version over the Genesis version. But with that said, the true perk and like the idea behind this dialogue is that other games, like when we were saying, I guess if they get it right, like I think Comic Zone is probably one of the better Genesis OSTs. There's nothing really quite like it out there. It sings, and it's something that on the Super Nintendo, I think, would not have been as good because it is because of the Genesis sound chip that it was able to do what it did. And that's what I mean. It's like you generally want to champion the things you like about a machine. It doesn't really do anyone any good to go out of your way just to bitch about what other people, like, just try to bring other people down. It's like, I'm over here enjoying my game console. Fuck that. that machine. It only runs like 5 teraflops or something, because I don't care about that shit. But someone will say it. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, why the hell does that matter to you? Just go play the thing you own. Why do you got to rag on my piece, my box? I'm happy with my box. Like, you ever hear people talk about the Switch when a game gets released from the Xbox and the PS4 to the Switch? And rather than just let Switch owners have a game, they have to go, oh, God, did you look at the frame rate on that thing? Look at all the concessions they had to take to get it to run. Like, well, you weren't going to buy it, so what do you care? I want it for the portability. I didn't need it for all this stuff.
That's the biggest thing about the Switch. Games might take a hit graphically or performance-wise, but you could play them fucking anywhere.
Yeah, it's such a nice perk to that. Like, it just makes it worth it. That's what makes the Switch special. Yeah. So rather than just dogpile the thing, just be like, this is what the Switch can do. And this is what the PS4 can do. And this is what the Xbox can do. They all have their strengths. Just enjoy your shit. That's how it works. That's the fun.
There you go. Just enjoy your shit. Don't knock somebody else for enjoying their shit. There you go. Exactly. Done.
Just imagine every time you trash somebody else's game machine willy-nilly, you're kicking an old man over, and then you steal his cane. And that's not good for anybody.
Hey, yeah, I'm not saying
it's a good thing.
It was the cane.
Oh, Lord. All right, moving on, some other news. A bunch of games are going to be leaving Xbox Game Pass middle of the month. No news on what games are going to be joining Game Pass. I'm going to guess that any announcements got delayed from this week, but the games leaving Game Pass, there's a bunch of them. This is kind of a bummer, but Resident Evil Revelations, Riptide GP Renegade, Riverbond, which I'm bummed. I loved Riverbond. Supermarket Shriek, Everspace, Superhot, and Scream Ride. And then on the PC side, they're also losing The Last Door Season 2, The Stillness of the Wind, Samaros 3, and Book of Demons. So a lot of games leaving Game Pass this month.
I can kind of understand that, though. It's kind of like how Sega Channel was, where they rotated games, because the idea is that when you get these subscription services, you don't want people to just be like, oh, I got the game now because I got it on Gamecast. You want people to say, well, I can play it right now, but eventually, if I like it enough and I haven't done all I need to do in it, I'm going to need to purchase this thing, because they still want to make their cut, you know?
Of course. Yeah.
Like,
but you do get a discount if you purchase the game that's on Game Pass.
Yeah.
And that does make you want to maybe the discount. Mm-hmm. So maybe that discount will even stick around once it comes off, because it was on there at some point.
No, once it's off Game Pass, the discount goes away.
Yep.
Buy it, people. Buy it now.
So if there's any of those games that you want to keep, might as well pick them up now. And again, hopefully next week we'll have news on what games are coming to Game Pass. But moving on, Twitch Prime just got a bunch of new free games for June. They're knocking it out of the park with their free game offerings.
Yeah, they definitely are.
Never lying. I was looking at that list and I'm like, I only have 24 hours in a day.
Oh, God. I feel that.
When it comes... I made a list today.
Like, I made a list today of just JRPGs I have started over the last few years that I really want to get to the other side of.
You'll never get there.
It's going to happen. I believe in myself. I believe in the heart of a JRPG.
Have you beat Ori yet?
Hey, it's not a JRPG. I'm safe.
Ori 2 has RPG elements.
It does have RPG elements.
God, but,
the five games joining Twitch Prime are Observer, Project Warlock, Forsaken Remastered, Steel Rats, and The Flame in the Flood. Cole, I know you're excited about that one.
Yeah, I was listening to Serlina, and I was like, if she doesn't say she hasn't played Flame in the Flood, I'm going to choke somebody.
I'm actually excited for Steel Rats. That's a good game.
If you haven't played Flame in the Flood, now's your chance. You have no fucking excuse. You have 24 hours a day. We're still quarantined.
I swear, you are the one that recommends games. I'm still waiting for you to play one of our recommendations.
I don't have time for that shit. Take that up.
I only have 24 hours a day.
Take that up with Joe.
I love that. You guys have 24 hours a day. What about you? I don't have time for that. There's only 24 hours in a day.
I have 3 children.
Make one of them play one of the games for you. They can relay the results.
Okay, Cole, if it makes you feel any better, I already saved The Flame in the Flood because I realized I wanted to play it.
You definitely need to play it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I will try this weekend.
Flame in the Flood is legitimately top five for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn. That's high
praise. Ever.
Is it for the story or for the gameplay? Because I've played Flame in the Flood, but yeah, I like it, but I'm curious about the top five. What got it up there?
I sit down in endless mode and play that shit for 3 days straight and forget that I haven't gone piss.
Damn. What's all this yellow crap around my ankles?
Okay, that's gross.
Did somebody spill lemonade again?
You know that Pernell is horrible at doing impressions of me, or he would have said yeller, and now it's just wasted.
I was being sensitive, Cole.
What's this yeller stuff around my ankles?
I get back to the holler, and this is what I stumble into.
Holler! A holler is something different. I ain't no holler back girl.
She's a holler back girl.
God damn it.
Mercy.
Holler at your boys.
Right. Next, you're going to be pronouncing "ol" properly and trying to mock.
Spilled this "ol" everywhere.
Oh, my God. Sony has come out and stated that any games released from July on for the PS4 must be playable on the PS5. Which makes me wonder, shouldn't they have been doing that for a while now?
Yeah, I feel like they needed a advance warning.
Like, just from July on?
The backwards compatibility element?
Yes. Which worries me. It makes me wonder that maybe the PS5 isn't going to be as compatible with the PS4 as people are hoping.
We've also not heard anything about any kind of smart delivery or anything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know jack shit about the PS5.
Well, I'll just flat out say that, like, the statement of, like, whenever they say backwards compatibility, but it's not hardware-based, that's like, to me, that's like general PR McGovern, so I'm just going to hold out on that. But the other part is, it might be just a matter of, like, it wasn't required, but they still gave people the tools, or if they had the time and resources to make it backwards compat, they would. So it's probably just like more like get your stuff out now, but at this certain point, we're going to require it. So people were able to just force their games out. But in the end, I just wanted to make a freaking PS3 again. Just make a PS3 mini. I don't fucking care. Just something to let me put my freaking discs in again.
I just want to play Parasite Eve again.
Oh, that game was so good.
Oh, I love
all Parasite. I want
that game
world,
deserves
man.
More love than it got.
So with the PlayStation news, I can't help but feel that the PS5 is simply just not ready. I think they were just trying to get ahead of the game for some strange reason, because I don't know about y'all, but my systems are fine. Lord knows my backlog is fine. I don't exactly need a new system. And they're like, hey, PlayStation 5, shiny thing. Ooh.
I can't remember who it was, but someone was telling me a little ways back that the idea behind new game console releases is less about like the market drying up as far as new game sales go, because as we all can attest to, game sales aren't slowing down at all.
No.
It's something else. It's something along the lines of just like a technological advancements, because in some weird way, game console releases actually drive advancing technologies, because when you release a game console that has a certain mod, like a build to it, that results in development going along that trajectory to basically just do better there. And they make more money through R&D. Like it's a really bizarre concept, but that's the best way the person tried to explain to me. Like, it's basically they make money through R&D, so they don't want it to go stagnant for too long. Because otherwise, really, they're not, in my opinion, they're not going to do but so much to justify a new system, period. It's just like, hey, PS5, now it looks realer or something. like no one's paying attention at this point. Like, everything looks real enough to me on our current systems. Like, I don't need it to go beyond that. And even if it does get that ability, most companies won't utilize it anyway. We're still going to be playing freaking Anime Fighters. So, I mean, it to me is just, it's a bunch of garble. Like, I don't care about those things, but that's how they sell us those machines. They'll tell you this stuff. The game system will come out, and then no one will utilize the power that they claim it has. And even if they do, no one's going to truly care.
I don't know. I can't wait to see a new Forza game on the Series X, because that's going to look insane.
And that's the thing. I feel like that's kind of how that stuff plays. Like, I would play Forza on the Xbox One, right? And I'm like, this game looks great. This is a beautiful game. I'm a driving man. And then the Series X comes out and get the new Forza in there. And it's like, you see all those still images on books and magazines. You're like, okay, I can't wait to play that. And you put the disc in the machine, or I don't know, on the Series X, maybe it'll just like directly interface with a hub, or I don't fucking know. But, and then all that luster is gone. Not saying it in a bad way. It's more like it's just you still playing a nice looking game. You're not like, oh man, look how much crisper it is compared to how it was on the Xbox One. You're just gonna be like, this looks nice.
You know what, Pernell? That is an excellent point. I think when the generation jumped from like the PlayStation 2 to the PlayStation 3, so I'm going way back in my way back machine here, TVs were technologically and widespread enough to take advantage of that jump. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, okay, things look like shit on your PlayStation 2, but on the PlayStation 3, oh my God, everything looks good. And you had the TV to take advantage of it. I still don't think that like 4Ks and whatever Ps that we have on TVs now, I don't think that that technology is widespread enough for everyone to really take advantage of these new systems as of yet. So I do think there is going to be kind of the lacklusterness that you described earlier. I think that's a thing. I think that's a really good point.
And then the funny thing is, I agree with that. There's one element, like you said, we were talking about how, like you said, that the like, TVs are pretty much where they're at, and we're not really able to really make the next level up jump and whatnot. But like, there's the element where the next frontier, people like to say, is going to be in the VR space. So, like, okay, now we're going to take all this technology we're bolstering up, and we're going to put it in your directly into your face, and you're going to wear these goggles and feel like you're in an action movie or whatever. But in my eye, I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but I'm curious about what you guys think. But for me, I feel like VR is still light years away from where it needs to be for it to be like this amazing thing that I'm pursuing enough to go out and just like buy it and make that my home console experience. And I'm not even sure what it would take to truly get it to the point where it is that.
I know. It would be a .hack/sign worthy. If I cannot put my VR headset on and have my consciousness transferred into the game itself, then I don't really want it. Like, that's what I want. Now, if there's an ultimate OS out here, then I know we're getting close. But that hasn't happened yet. So I will patiently wait on that.
VR also has the stumbling block of inaccessibility.
Yeah. Incredibly so.
Well, at the same time, though, if you had what she just mentioned, that accessibility would be out the window. It would be good for everybody because you wouldn't need, basically, you would transcend your physical body and you're just being this space doing whatever. Like,
but, well, that would become dangerous real quick if I would just not have to feel this shit.
Honestly, well, that's really how I think about that
book
too.
A really great book about that is Ready Player One as well, where they could do that. So I'm pretty sure no one's going to get the .hack/sign. So Ready Player One, they could also do that, but whatever. I'm being a nerd right now. Continue.
I would say The Evil Within is a bafflingly like creepy like directive in that regard to like how disturbing that can go, which is why I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this joke, because you could just like go unconscious, wake up somewhere and not realize that you went to sleep and woke up in a false universe, and you're just like running around. It's like, where the hell am I actually even at? How did I even get here? Actually, wait, Death and Request does that too, now that I think about it. There's a lot of things that do that. But yeah, you basically just like come wake up like, holy shit, where am I? Like, literally, where am I? I'm in some space. How'd I get here? Or you zap in and then someone breaks into your house and you're just like sitting on the couch where they're moving all your shit out. Like, there's so much that could get weird about that. Or being someone like me, I even used to joke about, like, you know, I'd go to work, come home, log in, never leave come until it's time to go back to work to make the money to keep paying for the space. You know, a lot of people would do that shit. Do you want to go to the bar tonight? Why the fuck would I do that? I can go to a space bar.
Yeah.
Oh man, well, we could talk about new games all we want, but I'm really interested in some retro games that are going to be coming out. The Microsoft Store unveiled two Namco Museum Archive collections that are set to release on June 18th. Have you heard about these?
No, I haven't heard about it.
The first one, Namco Museum Archives Volume 1, includes the games Dig Dug, Dragon Buster, Dragon Spirit, The New Legend, Galaxian, Mappy, Pac-Man, Splatterhouse Wanpaku Graffiti, Sky Kid, The Tower of Druaga, Xevious, and an 8-bit D-Master of Pac-Man Championship Edition, created specifically for this collection. And then, and then Volume 2 has the games Battle City, Dig Dug 2, Dragon Buster 2, Gaplus, Legacy of the Wizard, Mappy Land, Mendel Palace, Pac Land, Rolling Thunder, Super Xevious, and an 8-bit consoleized version of Galaga.
Did I mishear you? You said Legacy of the Wizard?
Yep.
Like the Falcon Borderbund software game?
I'm Namco Legacy of the Wizard. I don't know if it's the same or not.
See, I'm going to look that up. That's interesting news. Like, I do finally get a chuckle of the fact that I can't think of too many companies that have made money off of re-releasing their games as collections quite like Namco's pulled it off.
Yeah, Namco's pretty good at releasing arcade collections. But I didn't see a price listed for them. My guess is going to be $20 each.
I can dig that.
But you're getting 11 games per collection, so that's not a bad price if that is the cost.
I mean, considering what people are paying for that Game Gear, seriously, great price.
The Sega announced their Game Gear Mini that has, what, 4 games on each system?
Ain't no one's going to ever play them on those things because it's freaking impossible. Like, it's, when people were telling me it was small, I was like, yeah, you know, small, like a Game Boy Advance, tiny, you know? And it's like, no, we mean really small. And you look at it, it's like, it's the size of a Mentos container. What the hell is this? This is stupid. Like, it's...
Yeah, those mini Game Gears look ridiculous.
Like, it genuinely makes no sense to me. Like, who sat in a PR, in a R&D room, like a hashing session? It's like, okay, we got to come up with the next product. Because I remember correctly, there were also, like, news things. Like, it's like, Sega's going to make an announcement in a few days that's going to shake up the game industry in a big way. And people are like, Dreamcast 2? Dreamcast 2? People get real excited thinking Sega was going to do something big. It's like, we're going to release games you've already played on a miniaturized version of a console you didn't want.
Oh, no. Their big announcement was some kind of, they called it fog gaming instead of cloud gaming, where there's like under a second latency.
Ooh.
I don't know too much about it. I haven't really followed that too much. I just know that that's the big thing that Sega was talking about, is this fog gaming.
Yeah, they're going to need to do something with that name, because when I think of fog, I don't think of lightning fast. So
yeah,
I think of Silent Hill and dying, so probably not. So the only thing I think of it was, like, as you just mentioned that to us, you just said, hey, this is what they're actually doing. It's this fog gaming thing. And that makes me think, if that's their big announcement and all people are talking about are these miniaturized Game Gears, yeah, they're in trouble. They need to do something with that shit post haste.
There were a lot of people that were speculating that Sega was going to partner with Microsoft to release the Xbox in Japan as the Sega Xbox Series X.
That would have been a real announcement. That would have been the shit.
Because obviously, that didn't come to pass, but that was one of the rumors going around. I think that would be a smart idea. Because Sega and Microsoft used to be really tight back in the original Xbox days. It'd be interesting to see them partner back up.
Like, that was literally why I bought it. Like,
yeah.
Before, when the Xbox first came out, my brain was where a lot of people's were, where it was like, you know, there's a lot of consoles out right now. I don't need another one. I'm good. I'm quite fine. And then Sega got in there and was like, no, we're going to start releasing some crazy games on here. We got Gun Valkyrie and Jet Set Future. And eventually I was like, you know, Crazy Taxi 3, Otagi, yeah, it's like, it's just, you know, I need this machine. I need these Sega games. And I bought one for Jet Set Radio and Gun Valkyrie, and then I started buying other Xbox games, like Hunter the Wrecking. And it was a good machine, but I missed that partnership, and it would have been awesome to hear that they had that back.
Yeah, well, Sega has been getting friendlier with Microsoft lately, especially with the Yakuza series coming to Xbox.
Indeed.
Especially with Yakuza 7 being a Series X launch title. That's that's some big news.
You know, it'll be a great but you know what'll also be a great launch title? Kid Chameleon 2.
I don't think we're going to see that one.
Someday.
You know what? It could be someday, because I've been saying for years now that I would love a remaster of a game, and they just announced it this week.
Oh?
Kingdoms of Amalur: Re-Reckoning is coming from THQ Nordic August 11th. They are remastering Kingdoms of Amalur with improved visuals and refined gameplay, allegedly. All the DLC. All I want is an increased level cap on this game. That's what I'm hoping they do.
Listen,
I am so fucking excited for Amalur to come back.
I know you're excited, Joe Cam. I played the shit out of that game. I played it, and it was great. The DLCs, a delight. But I do not share the same excitement, because if all they're doing is prettying it up, I don't care. It's not a new experience. I am one of those people to where if you are going to remaster an older game, this game is not that old. I played it on the fucking PlayStation 3. Not that old. Maybe 10 years. I could still play it. I'm sure I got the disc around here somewhere.
It's playable on the Xbox One. You could still play it today.
I will say this in response to that.
Why does it need a remaster?
Why not?
I mean, I'm just being honest.
It's what THQ does.
But you're not adding anything to the game. Is there going to be, like, a new quest line?
I don't know.
Because I collected all the shit, okay? I collected all the shit. I got all the achievements.
Have you not paid attention to what THQ Nordic has been doing with all the remasters and re-releases that they've been doing? This is just part of their MO. It's probably going to come out at, like, $40.
But I will say this, though. There's potential here in its own weird way. So, like, normally, I'm on the same page. Like, why remaster something that's been recent enough to still play and look pretty decent on consoles you have access to? But Amalur has that interesting history behind it. Being the last game. Yeah, so it's like, this now could be that thing where it's like, hey, with the right marketing, with the right buzz and press, this thing could sell really, really well, which could also mean that a franchise that never had a shot can now become a franchise and see a possible follow-up or a sequel. So, like, if you're a fan of the game enough to have, like, you know, maxed it out on the Xbox, while it doesn't necessarily behoove you to rebuy, because I'm the same way, I'm not going to rebuy a game that I'm not going to intend to play through again. It's good to be like, hey guys, this game is really fucking good. If you missed it, get on it now. Show them that it's a quality game. And then hopefully we'll get follow-ups to that quality game. And then you'll be playing Amalur 2, wrecking the shit out of it.
I hope so.
I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm gonna support it just because I love the Amalur. I want to say series, but there is no series yet. I hope it becomes a series, but I loved Amalur. I want to see it succeed. THQ, they do a fairly solid job with their remaster, so I'm sure it's going to turn out fairly well. And I would love to play it again from the beginning and just re-experience it again. I can fire up the 360 version, but I'm already max level, so I can't progress any further in the game. I could finish up quests, but I don't make any progress, so I don't feel the need to.
Could be my sad ass, though, who bought the game, still upstairs, hasn't played it beyond, like, level 2 because of my life. And now I can, like, I can just play my old copy or jump on the remaster train with all the DLC. It's like, shit, what do I do?
I can't You're going to jump on the remaster.
I am.
I probably will, honestly, because at that point, it's like, well, now I want to see. I want to play. If I'm going to have one experience, it's going to be the nicer looking one.
I don't know if it's pretty enough. I'll probably buy it again, but I will buy it under protest.
Okay.
For now, you can save your money and play Ori.
I want to play Kingdom
out of here.
Amalur.
We can't. He can't be on the podcast anymore. Not on the even numbers. Kick him back to Tuesday. Get the fuck out of here. We're done with you.
Well, we might be done with him. That's all the news I have.
She's not recommending Flame of the Flask in her top five. She's talking about Ori.
You couldn't even say the name of it right.
I just this Ori.
I'm sorry, did you just say Ori? Is that what you said?
He also said Flame in the Flood wrong. I'm not even sure what he said. It was like Flame in the Flace or something. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
It is called Flame in the Flood.
You didn't say Flood.
I did say Flood. What else did I say?
I can't play it back. I don't have that technology. What do you think I run here?
Beast footage, Joe. Pronounce that Flame in the Flute.
The Flame in the Flute.
But it wasn't the Flame in the Flood.
I'm not sure what else I could have possibly said. That's the most amazing part.
You did it.
Only said Flame in the Ploop.
The Flame in the Ploop. That's the news I have. Anything any of you want to talk about? Or should we move on to the reviews?
Honestly, I can't flat out think of anything. Like I'm honestly, a lot of my news I get from you or from random sites. There's that one thing. So for fans of Monster Boy, the Monster Boy franchise, the company that was originally designing those called Westone, there's a arcade game that they put out years ago whose name is currently eluding me, but it is getting released on the Switch and PS4 this summer. Hmm. And people are getting ecstatic about it because, again, this was an arcade game that never saw the light of day that they were producing in 1997. And it is colorful and awesome as shit looking. And I want it. I want it yesterday. But I don't even know what the hell it's called because I didn't even know it existed until today. So.
Wow.
What?
Well, find out more information on it and maybe we can make it part of the show in the future.
I will.
So yeah, Cole, Surly, any news you want to talk about or should we move on to reviews?
Haven't y'all heard enough news from me already?
Never. We can always stand for more news.
Well, let's see. My turnip prices in Animal Crossing is shit.
Okay, so we're going to reviews. That's where we're going. Pernell, well, I guess we could let you get going. Pernell, you don't have any reviews, so I guess we could just let you get going if you wanted.
Okay, I'm going to get my butt ready to try to play a video game, which usually means pass out because I'm getting young. So, So I guess I will depart for now, but I'll see you guys at StacyCon 94, a.k.a. Tuesday.
Sounds good. Pernell, do you have any final words?
Go back and listen to our discussion on race relations, because that shit's important. And most importantly, secondly anyway, don't be a fucking dick. Just don't. The world's got too many of them. We don't need more.
That is good advice. Don't be a dick.
Righteous.
This is amazing how much things would improve societal-wise, if people just weren't dicks. That's it. just imagine. Think of how many interactions you have had in your life where the person that was being a pain in the ass could have just stopped and like, wait a minute, am I being a dick right now? That's a golden rule. Don't do that shit. Oh, man, I'm sorry. I was being a dick there. Look, let me get the door for you. Go in there. You're good. My apologies. That is all. You know, just that's like the golden rule. That's new generation golden rule. Don't be a dick. Now I'm rambling.
Yeah, so. You are just a little. So we'll let you go, Pernell. Have a good night.
Have a good night, guys.
All right. We got to get on to reviews. Surly, you're going to go second. We got Cole to do one first. The first game to talk about is called The Persistence, developed and published by Fire Sprite, released May 21st on Xbox One for $29.99. The Persistence challenges you to survive aboard a doomed starship overrun with horrific and murderous aberrations. Explore, evade, and fight your way through the depths to bring the craft home. Cole, tell us about The Persistence.
You're going to need persistence if you intend to actually push through this game. Okay, that's what you need right there. Like, okay. That's the whole reason I named it that. Because you need to be persistent as fuck to get anywhere in this game.
Oh, boy.
It is a first-person survival roguelock. That is not a joke. It is a very difficult combination of game. And it very much so plants itself in that first person survival horror genre by immediately having you wake up on a spaceship where shit has hit the fan. Some tropes die hard. Okay. That's just where we're at when it comes to survival horror these days. So the game challenges you to accept that your character is nothing more than a sentient sack of meat. And the way that it does that is that you, the very first thing you do as you're getting your footing in this world is discover your previous corpse. Just kind of hanging out there, very, very dead in the hallway. Of course, as it is with a survival horror where you're in space, you've also got a nice little healthy amount of amnesia. So you've got to figure out what the fuck's even going on in the first place. But you're doing that in a spaceship that has been overrun by weird monsters. Are we sensing a theme here? It's just dead space. It's, fuck. I've played so many of these recently, I can't even think of the other names of them. Soma. It's, yeah, I've played a lot of these. And if I'm perfectly honest, I'm a little tired of them.
Oh, boy.
And I tried really hard not to let that fact cloud my judgment of the persistence. Like, I tried to go, yeah, okay, so maybe it's not the freshest narrative that I've played. Fine. What does it bring to the table, right? So the persistence started its life as a VR game.
Yeah.
That's where you're going to get a few of your twists in the actual gameplay. For example, you can't jump or mantle over things. Because it was a VR game, you have like a cursor on the screen that kind of moves around where you're looking at. And when you hover that cursor over interactive items, then you can either click to pick them up, or in the case of like trying to jump or move over something, an obstacle, then it literally kind of just dematerializes and rematerializes you. So you kind of teleport a little bit. It's weird and it takes a lot of getting used to, but it's an important function to learn how to use in the game. Because if you don't, those motherfucking listeners are going to get you every time. I will get to the listeners in a minute, but just take my word for it. Learn
listeners, I don't know what listeners are. I've never run into those before.
We don't have those on this show. You do not want them in the persistence. All right? Maybe the game was trying to tell me something in the long run. maybe listeners are a bad thing after all. Who knows? My story, and I'm sticking to it. So, as I mentioned, it is a roguelike. So, again, you've got another twist in the story where you discover that every time you die, you just get recloned over and over and over. And I'm not shitting about the over and over. You're going to die a lot. We'll get there. when you die and you are recloned, you actually have a choice. Initially, you only have one character that you can spawn in as. But as you progress through the story, you unlock different characters that you can clone yourself to be. And some of them have different perks and cons to them. The one that you start off with initially, they have the ability where like the upgrade points have a discount. So it doesn't cost you as much to upgrade your health and your stealthiness and things like that. God, we're going to get stealthiness. so those upgrades that you need to get a little farther each time, they're not as expensive. Whereas there's other ones, like I said, so you unlock them later, but like they have, improved body tissues. See where I'm going there?
Okay.
Those fuckers don't die as easy. That's not to say it's impossible. Just not as easy. So, boy, I'm dancing around having to get to the combat in this game. I guess, fuck it. Let's talk about the combat.
Yeah, get okay? to the, just rip the Band-Aid off, get to it.
Combat sucks ass. All right, there. I said it. Band-Aid's off. Now, let's go and talk about why the combat is bad. This game was made for VR, and in most regards, it functions properly as far as like when you're stealthy and say that there's a creature and you want to just like come up and do a stealth kill, and you kind of teleport yourself behind it and then just press a button and you stab it in the neck and take some of its stem cells. Easy peasy. You learn that the first thing game teaches you. If it was the only way you had to deal with killing shit, this would be great. That immediately goes out the window, though. Because then the game has different enemy types and you are forced to get into combat. Hand-to-hand combat is okay enough. Like, it kind of, it still isn't smooth. You have to manage trying to use like some kind of biometric shield while still punching and laying into whatever's attacking you. It's fine. It's not great, but it's fine. It does what it needs to do. Problem is that when guns and things of that nature are introduced, I never figured out how to properly aim the gun. Because it has that VR mechanic, you can't just like look at something and shoot traditionally. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. But I have effectively taken the stance of, I will never fire a gun in this game. Jeez. I am just going to find a million and one ways to teleport myself around and get around these fuckers or beat the snot out of them with my fists, because I am not firing a gun in this game if I'm ever going to beat it. Might not be a bad strategy to take, because as I said, there are the listeners. The listeners are an enemy type where they don't have eyes. They can only hear you. But they hear every single step you take. And if you can teleport across the whole room, great. But if your teleport doesn't go that far, where you kind of fucked. And you're left trying to like walk a little and sneak around them, they're going to get you every time. I have not found a good strategy for those fuckers either. I don't know that there is one. I know a lot of people really hyped this game up and loved it on VR and thought it was so like earth-shatteringly good. But there's something lost in the combat element on the port to console.
That's a bummer.
I cannot get my head around it. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I fancy myself a pretty good first-person shooter player. I don't know what's wrong. I can't do it. I can't figure it out. I feel I've made progress, but it's only by dumb luck and willingness to just try to ignore everything.
Yeah. Well, what would you do to fix the game if it were up to you? What would you do to address issues?
There certainly needs to be... Well, and here's the thing. I'm gonna rattle off some things. Like more assistance in aiming and some better explanation of where you're trying to go and things like that. And the problem with saying, it needs these items is that they're actually in the game. There's an assist mode. You can play the game in assist mode. Joe, can you figure out why I didn't want to play the game in assist mode?
No.
It turns off achievements. Do not penalize players for needing help.
Yeah, I hate that.
I'm sorry to the developers. If you listen to me, I have crooked fingers and I have arthritis, I get hand fatigue, and I use a lot. I really, when I first loaded the game up and I saw all those accessibility settings, I was like, oh, holy fuck. You know, it was such a good thing to see. And then I saw the assist mode and I was like, fuck yes, even better. I'm in here. And then it was like, no achievements for you. Fuck off. If you don't play the game the way we intended it, you don't get any joy. That's bad. Bad development.
Hate when they do that.
I really, even though I sit here and I say, yeah, it's not groundbreaking, new, shake your world kind of narrative, I still enjoy these kind of games. And I still want to play them and have fun with them, but I don't want to be penalized for the fact that it's hard for me.
No.
And it does, and that's a shame. All in all, though, look, it's a good-looking game. It doesn't have to. I can see how it's far more intriguing and novel in VR. And I think, unfortunately, just because it loses that sparkle, the VR sparkle, is kind of what happens to it. Why I'm sitting here going, well, on console, yeah, it's fine, but it's not anything different, you know? Yeah. It is different in VR, but for us, it's like, okay, well, run and don't get caught,
you know? Well, overall, $30 on it. What do you think?
I'm going to roll with a try it because it has its perks and it has its benefits. And if you don't care about whether or not it disables achievements, if you need an assisted mode and you're fine with that, or you don't need the assisted mode and you're like, fuck it, I'm gonna roll into it. Have fun with it. I think that's great. But from a standpoint, as a player and a reviewer who does struggle with a disability, it's a little hard to be like, yeah, go buy this, because it's like, if you're like me, you probably can't play it that well.
No.
So.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Night Squad, developed and published by Chainsawsome Games, released June 5th on the Switch for $14.99. Night Squad is an insane 1-to-8-player chaotic arena friendship destroyer. Take on current friends and future frenemies in any of the incredibly fun game modes ranging from Last Man Standing to Medieval Soccer, all of that using only weapons from the Middle Age and laser guns and miniguns. Surly, tell us about Night Squad.
Okay. So, can y'all hear me, by the way?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, great. You know, just got to check. Anyway, yeah. Night Squad is a game where you get to pick your individual knight that represents you. And it was surprisingly, I'm not going to say robust, but each of the knights, they don't talk, but they all have their own little individual names, and they all have their, like little personalities. And it was kind of cool. Different colors, different designs, all that stuff. It was nice. I appreciated that. I played as the Green Knight. His name was Smash. And every time I won, he would smash the sword against his helmet. So yeah, Smash.
Makes sense.
There was like a savior. He was blue. He looked like a paladin, and every time he won, like, light would come from the sky, like he was blessed. There was like shockwave, siren, just like 10 choices to choose from. It was nice. So the gameplay, there are a couple different modes. There's the bots only mode, which is useless unless you just want to learn how to play a specific type of game. There was the versus mode, where that's the game modes that you got to play in. And then there was the challenges mode, where there were 6 challenges to beat. And each challenge was a little bit different. Obviously, I didn't really mess with the bots only mode because I don't care about that. So I'm going to concentrate on the versus and the challenges. We'll start with the versus. There are a lot of game modes in Night Squad. There's a team deathmatch. There's free for all. There's Juggernaut, which was my favorite one. There is the soccer one. The soccer was shit. Like, I think there's like 10 game modes, if I'm not mistaken. And not only are there different game modes, each game mode has at least 3 different, like, I guess if you're a soccer fan, the term is pitch, but there are 3 different, at least 3 different maps. There we go. With each game mode. So that was really cool too, because obviously the maps are constructed differently. So, it requires different strategies for different types of maps. And I really enjoyed my time in the versus section. Obviously, I played every single type of game mode. Again, the soccer was shit. I really liked Juggernaut mode. So in Juggernaut mode, again, this is, it supports up to 8 people. And as y'all know, I have no friends. So I had to play by myself, and the rest were bots, but you can manipulate the intelligence of the bots. Easy, medium, hard, or insane. I just stuck with medium, and I was pretty fine with that. Even with medium, I still lost sometimes, so that was pretty interesting. But anyways, juggernaut mode. Everyone starts on the far sides of the map, and you all converge on one point to become the juggernaut. Now, the juggernaut, you get a shield, and you get a minigun. And it is your job to mow down everyone else to stop them from killing you. In the game, the shield absorbs one hit. So they have to hit you twice in order to kill you. You drop the minigun. The person who kills you now becomes the juggernaut, and you just recycle that. That was probably my favorite game mode. I became the juggernaut, and I think I amassed like 3,000 points because the AI is decent, but it's not super smart. So they would run at me single file, and I'm like, I have a minigun, y'all. Yes, keep running at me single file. That's great. But in all of the game modes, they have different spawn points where you can get different types of weapons. And the weapons are really cool. I did not see a minigun in any other mode except Juggernaut, which makes me cry. But they have regular swords, medium swords, long swords. They have the laser gun, which is fun. They have a weapon called the Rippler, which shoots three lasers that bounce off walls, and that's fun. They did have bow and arrows. Bow and arrows suck balls. They're a terrible weapon. It's also probably the weapon that I died by the most. But whatever. They also had bombs, and they had a horse. You could get on a horsey. Yeah, it was fun. They had a drill, too. Oh, yeah, there's a game mode that specifically involves the drill. I forgot the name of it. But basically, you have five crystals that you have to protect. And also, the enemy has five crystals. So protect your crystals, destroy their crystals, but you can only destroy their crystals with the drill. And there were two specific spawn points for the drill. So it's like mad dash to get a drill. Do not die while you have the drill, because if you die, then the weapon is gone. No one else can pick it up. You got to wait for it to respawn. Respawn times were fine, a few seconds, but in a game like that, you know, a few seconds is life or death.
Yeah.
So yeah, I enjoyed the game modes. I enjoyed the different maps. It was cool. So the challenges mode. Okay, in the challenges mode, there are six different types of challenges. And all of them obviously has a specific goal in order to beat the challenge. The first challenge, it was like lightning volley or something like that. Basically, you have a whole bunch of undead skeletons spawning, and you have to not only kill the skellies, but you have to destroy their spawn points, and your only weapon is a lightning wand. But it was cool because the lightning wand, if it hit a skelly or if it hit a spawn point, it would bounce. So it was like a chain lightning wand. That challenge was pretty fun. The second challenge was two worms, and you had to destroy the worms. But the only vulnerable part on them was their tails. So imagine two big-ass worms with really weird-looking faces, by the way, just slithering all around the map, kind of like Slitherio, those types of games. You can't touch them. You can only touch their tails to hit them. If you touch any other part, you die and you have to start over. And that was pretty cool. The third challenge was a troll challenge. You are up against four trolls that have shields, and the shields protect 3/4 of them, like, you know, like a C around the troll bodies. The trolls also attack you. Spikes come out of the shield and they charge at you. And you have to defeat the trolls by getting them in their weak spot. I could not beat that challenge, which was upsetting. Because I'm like, by the way, with the challenges, just to go back for a little second. There's easy mode and insane mode. I'm just starting the game, so I started on easy. But I couldn't get off the third challenge because the fucking trolls. Okay, so they would charge at you, and you run out of the way, of course. Oh, and your weapon is only a sword. They charge at you, and they hit whatever. They can hit a wall. They can hit each other. That's the end of their charge. But they are not very vulnerable for long. Like, they immediately turn over. So you're thinking, hey, I've been playing games for a long time. I know that if you hit a wall, you're going to be stunned for 3.7 seconds. These trolls are like, nah, I blinked, I'm good. So I think I've only killed like one, and then I would die. And
wow.
Yeah. I would love to see what the other challenges are like, but I can't kill all the trolls. So who knows? I do know, and this was pretty cool. You can unlock other knights. So when I knocked out all of the game modes in the juggernaut mode specifically, I got like 3,000 points because obviously I can kill anyone if you're going to charge at me in a straight line. And I unlocked the Sinister Knight, and his little character is so cool. It's like all black with silver, and he's like chuckling all badass and stuff. And I'm like, oh, I want to unlock more knights, but that was the only one that I could unlock. I do imagine you can get more by beating the challenges, probably on easy and insane, but since I can't get off the fucking trolls, I can't tell you. Oh, let's see what else. Controls, pretty good. Music, it's just one track. One continuous track, but I wasn't really paying attention to it. But all in all, I enjoyed the game. I would like to play with more people to see if I really can end friendships and relationships, but I doubt that would happen. We might get upset with each other for a little while and be like, hey, do you want to play Capture the Flag again? Yes, I'd like to play Capture the Flag again.
Do you want to play Capture the Flag again? Fuck you. Don't talk to me again. Well, 15 like, bucks. $15 on Night Squad. What do you think?
Okay. So I would, this is a tentative buy it. And I only say tentative because you're not going to have as much fun with it if you don't have other people to play with it. Well, to play you with, shut up. Don't even say anything. You know what I mean.
I'm just sitting here.
Uh-huh. The point is, if you can get at least one other person to play with you, personally, I would recommend at least four. Then yeah, you'll have a lot of fun by yourself. You're still going to have fun, but you're missing the multiplayer aspect. And this is definitely designed to be played with more people. So a tentative buy it.
Sounds good. All right. Well, that is it for you. I guess we'll let you go as well. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the time as always. Cole, I love you.
I love you too. Bye.
Bye. Moving on, next game to talk about is called Those Who Remain, developed by Camel 101, published by Wired Productions. It released May 28th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $19.99. As the lights go out, the embers of darkness are stoked in the sleepy town of Dormont. Confront uncomfortable horrors, keep your sanity in check, and survive the night in this story-driven first-person psychological thriller. All of those words seem to be up your alley. So what do you think?
Is there any surprise that I'm reviewing this? What month is it? Is it October? Where are we getting all these horror games from? What is going on here? I have questions. I don't know.
I have no answers.
The 2020 has been fucked anyway, so we might as well just throw a shit ton of horror games at me in June. Why not? Yeah, so Those Who Remain is a horror game. Surprise! It's first person. Second surprise, I guess. I don't know. You play as... Great. I can't remember if it's Edward or Edmund all of a sudden. I just completely lost it off the tip of my tongue. Shit. I didn't make a note of that one either. Because I played it and I was like, yeah, I know this, I'm good. And then I Edward, okay, I was right the first time. After I started to say Edward, I was like, it might be Edmund? Am I wrong? What am I doing?
Ed's good.
It's a rough week, guys. So you play with a little fellow named Edward, and he is in the little sleepy town of Dormont. I don't know why I fucked up the pronunciation there. Dormant. And it's every bit as sleepy as the name would imply. It's late at night. Edward is in the throes of an affair, but he's second guessing shit, and he's decided he's gonna break it off with his lady friend. So he goes to meet her at a hotel. I also should specify, this game starts off right out of the gate with a content warning for suicide. So if that's an issue for you, just go ahead and like dip, okay?
Yeah.
But once you get past all that, then we're on to the affair. So he's decided to break it off. He goes to a hotel in Dormant, and he's greeted with a whole lot of darkness. And this will basically set the stage for your experience with Those Who Remain. Everything is fucking pitch black dark. Fine. It's a horror game. Pretty good way to go about making shit spooky. Once you find your way into the hotel room where your mistress is staying, you discover that she's not there. She left the water running. And you get a mysterious phone call that says, stay in the light. That is your gameplay right there for the entirety of your time with Those Who Remain. You're constantly going to be looking for light. So I've got a little bit of a confession here. I'm actually terrified of the dark.
Really?
Like, not, I'm in the house and it's dark, but like, I'm standing in the middle of a field and I can't see 3 foot in front of me. I'm terrified, okay? Those Who Remain fucking played on my fear of that so bad. And I was so uncomfortable the whole time I was playing because it's one of the few things in the world that I'm genuinely bothered by. And so there's constantly just pitch black everywhere, and then there are eyes. And if you turn on the light, the eyes go away. Or if you get into the light, where there's light, it's fine. One of the earliest scenes has you exploring a house, and you discover, like, when things are dark, the lights are off, it looks, all you see are just the whites of eyes looking at you, all different shapes, all over the place. I'm getting, like, my hair is raising up on the back of my neck thinking about it. Turn on light, and you realize, like, it's just pictures in the room, right? Really creative. I'm super into it. I can live with this. If you go into a room or into the dark where there is no light, then this is one of like the kind of frustrating moments of the game because you just kind of get pulled into it. And so it kind of serves as like the death sequence to let you know you fucked up without going full-fledged, you died, right? But the first couple times it happened to me, I thought I had messed the game up. Like, there's no indication of why it's doing it. I was just like, why wasn't I supposed to, what's going on here? It was kind of hard to really piece together because just like, it just makes it look like this, whatever scene you're looking at kind of blurs. And then you just go back to whatever checkpoint you had last hit. So it would be nice if there was like at least some kind of indication a little more as to why the fuck everything got blurry and not just, great, my game froze. And then I respawn. Never mind, I wasn't frozen at all. Gameplay wise, like I said, staying into the light is really the whole like premise and the number one thing you need to be concerned about, which means that there isn't any sort of combat or anything like that. You will have encounters with one large creepy motherfucker. but your experience is that you're meant to be stealthy and stay away from them and stay out of their field of vision. That's all fine and good, except for you can't crouch and you can't like peek around. And so you're just kind of like standing somewhere hoping this guy doesn't see you. It's a little bit of a problem. Like, okay, well, let me go stand behind these boxes and hope that he doesn't like see my shoes through a crack or some shit. It could be a little more forgiving in that regard if I had my say so about it. The reason too that this is an even bigger issue, especially for me, is that I had a lot of trouble with the menus in the game. The menus, there's not a whole lot of options in the first place. It's basically like continue, new game, options, and go. But in the options, everything is done on a slider bar. Immediately just starting the game up, I ran into a problem with the slider bar for the gamma. It would go left and make everything dark as shit super easy. But I could sit and hold it forever and it would never go back to the right. There was one point where I straight up uninstalled the game, deleted my save, reinstalled it. I even went and deleted my cloud save when I was just starting because it was so dark I couldn't actually see anything, but it wouldn't like go back to the right to let me adjust it. Even when I started a new one, it still wouldn't let me make things brighter. It was just stuck in the middle and that was that. It was dark or nothing. But it tells you, you know, adjust the slider until the creature is barely visible and you're like, okay then. I guess this is where we are, whether I like it or not. That also carries over to being a problem with the sensitivity, which we all know is super fucking important for me.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, there's a sensitivity bar. Hooray. Especially after playing the game for a little bit at its, I always try to play it like its current sensitivity. Sometimes you luck out and a game's sensitivity will be moderately okay from the start. So I like to at least see where it's at before I go tinkering with it. But I was like, no, it was literally fatiguing my wrists just to walk up three steps in the game. I was like, yeah, that's not going to fly. So I went to adjust the sensitivity, never would go up. Had the exact same problem as the gamma bar.
That sucks.
Now, the interesting thing is that at one point, I accidentally bumped it down three times. It went down, goes down super easy. It's like a horn on Nickel Knight. Just gone. Wanna go down?
A whore on Nickel Knight.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Everybody got their nickels ready. So, you know, anyway, but you couldn't get it to go back up. Now, once it did go down on the sensitivity slider, it went down three notches. I did manage to get it to come back up one notch. But that was it. No more.
Wow.
And I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. They had it with having the sliders, and then they lost it. Just they giveth and they taketh away.
But clearly they need to fix their sliders in the game.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't necessarily even say that's a quality of life thing. That's just a legitimate bug that needs taken care of. You know, not being able to crouch or peek around corners, those are quality of life improvements. But for the sliders to be broke, that's just a problem. Beyond that, though, I think it's super cool. And I love the way that they use the fear of the dark and keeping you contained to the light. One other thing that I would fuss at, though, is that when you are turning on lights, the light switch has a red light on it. I cannot tell you how many times I died because I flipped a switch and didn't realize that the light was already on. The light is red whether the light is on or off. There's no other visual indicator. And because everything is just so dark and grimy, it's kind of hard to tell sometimes. Is this light on or off? So it would be nice to have a visual indicator. Yes, it's on. You know, green for on, red for off, instead of just always being red.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, overall, $20 on Those Who Remain. What do you think of it?
I I would love to give it a buy it. I think from a horror aspect, it does a really, really good job. But it does have that bug with the sliders that does affect playability if you're disabled and need to increase the sensitivity. And it does need some quality of life improvement. So I'm good with going with a more of a try it.
Works for me. And it sounds like if they address the issues, it could easily be a buy it.
Yeah, I would easily bump it up. I had a good time. It was just hard to play.
Yeah. All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Resolution, developed by Monolith of Minds, published by Deck 13, Mayflower Entertainment, and Whisper Games. Released May 28th on Steam for $19.99. An old killer escorts a curious AI through chaotic combat, puzzling secrets, and unsettling calm. Explore a fractured future, collecting weird weapons and stories to piece together the past. Cole, what is Resolution?
Speaking of hard to play, let's talk about Resolution. it is a tough one. Resolution is, first off, just fucking beautiful. It's very much in that same pixel art style as Children of Morta, The Messenger. Gameplay-wise, though, it reminds me very much of Dead Cells. Without being, like, platformy, it's just that I think the way that the character looks and the hack and slash element of it, I'm like, oh, it's kind of Dead Cells-ish. I'm not sure. That's just where it sat with me when I was playing it. Oddly enough, I've seen a lot of people comparing it to Hyper Light Drifter, but I've actually never played Hyper Light Drifter.
Really?
So I can't make that comparison, but it seems like a fair thing to note. You play as an old man who is just slicing and dicing and killing fucking everything comes around with. Or at least that's how I played, because I didn't fucking know what else I was supposed to do. There's not a whole lot of not a whole lot of detail as for or instruction and helping you get your bearings in the game. It's kind of just like throws you into the deep end and says good luck, you know. You're just meant to kind of figure it out on your own, which fine, I get it. I know that's a thing, you know. But it does become problematic in some of the later stages of the game where you're trying to find where you're even supposed to go. You have a map, but it doesn't explain shit. But there's a lot of areas where, like, the foreground can cover walls and you can't even see the exit or where you're supposed to be. And because there's no indicators and you're left to your own devices, then you can wander around like a fool. And I did. You can wander around like a fool, just not even aware of where you're supposed to go. If it sounds like I'm beating around the bush on giving you any details of the story, it's because I kind of am. Like, the moment you start to pick up on the story, you're already in spoiler territory, because the whole game kind of plays off that, hey, you don't know shit about who you are, or your memories, or why you're here, or why you're doing this. And so, like, if I, like, I could, I have to tell you that you have an AI guide that helps you out, and even telling you that is like telling you a spoiler. But the AI is part of the problem too, because it's there and it tells you shit and it still doesn't tell you where the fuck to go. Like, give me a marker, dude, something. I spent my greatest amount of time with the game just running around and hacking and slashing whatever popped up. And I don't know if I was even supposed to do that. I know that there are a lot of secrets and stuff in later levels where, like, you're supposed to take cats to one place. I can't tell you shit about this game without spoiling anything. But, like, you take cats to one certain place, and that has an effect even later on beyond that. And then there's other just little things that you find that piece together your character's memories. But I don't know if finding those things is beneficial. Like, when you find it, you're like, oh, well, I broke a box and a rabbit jumped out. Guess I'll smash the rabbit and you can kill it. And then you're like, fuck, though, did I just mess up something? Because I don't know if I'm supposed to save the rabbits or kill them, because the game doesn't tell me. You're kind of just meant to fuck around till you figure it out. Clearly, that is not my favorite gameplay mechanic ever.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because as far as the rest of the game goes, it's actually really damn good. I can definitely see people who enjoy, you know, like I said, The Messenger and Dead Cells and I guess Hyper Light Drifter. But like if those kind of games spoke to you and you're into that kind of epic adventure, then and like this really beautiful pixel art world with really amazing music, then you're going to be down for it. But for people like me that need at least a marker to go, hey, go here, dumbass. It's a lot less enjoyable because you just feel stuck and like you're missing out on things.
Yeah. Well, overall, $20 on resolution. What are you thinking?
I know this is going to sound crazy because I'm going to say it after following out that I felt like I missed out, but I think it deserves a buy it. Because I know there's a market, there's a core group of gamers who this is the kind of their meat and potatoes. And I think resolution, from what I can gather from it, is really going to be a hit for those kind of players. Even though that's not the kind of player that I am.
No.
I can still recognize that objectively it's solid and it's good. But I do wish that it would just help guide you just a smidge more.
Well, hopefully they'll hear that and take some feedback and do some updates and maybe hold address my hand. That. Yeah.
I am a dumb. Hold my hand.
All right. Well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Warface Breakout, developed and published by My Games, released May 26th on Xbox One and PS4 for $19.99. Become the ultimate mercenary of tomorrow in Warface Breakout, a tactical online first-person shooter where tight gunplay and strategic team cooperation define the high-stakes PvP experience. Engage in fierce gunfights, make split-second decisions, and master a vast arsenal of weapons to outsmart your opponents and secure victory. Cole, how is Warface Breakout?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
Oh, no.
I feel like I've been so evil this week. God damn it. I'm going to be hard on Warface. I remember playing Warface, the first one, the original, and I was super into it. It was just a really solid shooter. I don't know what the fuck happened with Breakout, but it feels more like they dropped that Call of Duty arcade shooter gameplay and tried to go for a more strategic Rainbow Six Siege type of gameplay. But they lost so much in the process. Maybe I'm nuts, but I remember the original Warface being really pretty. Not like, oh my god, it's shaking the world pretty, but solid pretty for what it was. For some reason, Breakout does not have that pretty aesthetic. It looks very bland. There's very little texture. I haven't played Counter-Strike Go, but when I was looking for backup details and stuff about Breakout, people were like, oh yeah, it's like Counter-Strike and looks. And I'm like, man, we have come a little further than that at this point in time in graphics. It doesn't have to look so, everything looks smooth and just like there's no real detail. It's very minimal. Now, I don't want to just completely shit on it. Okay. There is one good element.
What's that?
Two good elements. I'll give it two even. The first being the level layout, the map design, super solid. There was a lot of opportunities to kind of travel around the map in different paths so that you actually had the opportunity to like sneak up and be stealthy or be thoughtful and come up on your enemies in different ways. There was never a time where I've got a confession, because I'm very habitual And like, I will pick a path and I will run it to death if I know that it's successful when it comes to first person shooters. That's a bad thing. I shouldn't do it, but I do it. but in Warface, that didn't work. Like, I could never go the same path repeatedly and have it work out for me. There would be people in different places every time. The second perk is that it had a solid community, and I was really concerned about the ability to find people to play Warface with. But no matter what time I got on, what day it was, there was always somebody to play with and against. It was super, super easy to find a game, both in core and hardcore modes. It does have core and hardcore modes. If there is a mode other than plant the bomb, I don't fucking know it. I couldn't find it. I searched everywhere. That was all it would let me play, ever. I don't like objective-based games. I like to just give me team deathmatch. I want to shoot shit and go. That's good. That's how I would get demonetized right there. Somebody's going to clip that shit out of context and I'm going to be in trouble. Thank goodness somebody listens to us.
Yeah, seriously.
But I mean, I just don't like objective-based games. And that was all it was. It was just, here's A, here's B. Swap sides after somebody wins. Swap them again. Swap them again until three rounds are up. Bye, out, go. You know? And yeah. I was like, okay, but that wears out its welcome very quickly. Very quickly, especially if you don't like that kind of mode. So I was disappointed that I was expecting a little more variety to the gameplay, and it just wasn't there, especially given the price point for the game and that, you know, it's effectively a sequel. I just thought there should have been more, and the whole thing just left me wanting. I was like, okay, the first one was free and had all kinds of shit, and Breakout is paid. And it's just demolition over and over and over and over. Plant the bomb, don't get dead. Plant the bomb, don't get dead.
No.
So it was a big bummer. I was really disappointed with that.
Well, overall,
I'd love to sit here and tell you I have more, but that was all the game was, and there isn't more.
Yeah. It's a bummer when shallow games come out. You just wish that there was more to it.
And with Warface, I expected more. Like, I was like, okay, but there's no campaign at all? Nothing? Not even, like, a training mission? Like, it throws you in. You don't even get to set up weapon classes or shit. You have to pay the credits that you get from killing enemies to buy a gun to use to kill more enemies, to get credits to kill more enemies. But if you ain't killing anybody, you're running around with a pistol so somebody snipes you from across the map. That's it. You're fucked.
On the bright side, they're not pulling a culling and you have to pay to play. Pay per play.
Per play.
Yeah. I had to correct myself there.
But there are microtransactions and loot boxes, and that's all very gross.
Yeah.
Like, they're a little behind the time on that one. That ship has sailed, and I don't know what they're doing there.
Well, overall, $20 on Breakout, what do you think?
I'm sorry. I'm going to give it a deny it. There's just nothing to justify that price tag.
What could they do to justify the price tag?
More game modes. Something. Fucking, I don't know anything. You don't even have to give me like a full-fledged campaign, because that's $60 game territory, and I get that. But I don't know, just something I can do as like a single-player training to get my bearings about me, rather than just throwing me in and letting me get picked off. Let me set up some kind of classes to go in with, even if I have to like pay or play to unlock them over time. And for the love of God, give up the loot crates. Ah!
Yeah, I could agree on loot crates.
Just as soon as I saw that, they don't even try. Like, at least nowadays when you see loot crates and shit, they try to, like, make them blend into the game somehow and give them a purpose. This is just, like, literally straight up says, loot crates!
Well, that is it for the reviews. We got our chat with Maze Dude coming up. Are you ready for that?
I am ready.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. We'll listen to a little bit of Maze Dude, and then we'll be right back with Maze Dude. Cole, do you have any final words?
Loot crates are bad, and Black Lives Matter.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another thanks to everyone who came on at the first half of the show, but we got more to do. Cole, are you excited?
I am excited. I feel like we're in a time warp, but I'm excited.
You're excited because we have a guest joining us. It's been a while. Chris Getman, Maze Dude. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's good to have you on the show. It's been a while. Last time you were here, Chris was our co-host. It's
not
been a
Chris
while
anymore.
Yeah, we have Cole now. She talks funny.
I do. You can say, just pick a word and I'll probably say it funny.
Accommodate.
Joe has a favorite. I know what he would say immediately. Now
what,
that it's
oil?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oil.
Yeah. I think we discussed that last show too.
Last episode, we had a game called Turmoil, which was an oil rigs like simulator. And the description and the discussion was like 90% saying the word oil over and over. And we were all debating whether or not we would go insane if Cole had to review that game. Because she would just say oil.
I can't be the only person in the world that says it like that.
Well, you might be.
Turmoil.
It's just wrong.
Turmoil.
There you go. You did it. I'm so proud of you.
You know the conscious effort involved to do that, though? Like, shit.
Oh, man. So, Mr. Maze Dude, it's been a while since you've been here. Mm-hmm. What have you been up to music-wise? What are you doing?
Music-wise? Well, I think the last time I was talking about American Pixels, my good old Kickstarter-funded project, which was a success. And it was weird. I launched the album, you know, I actually released it in early 2017, but then I had like those Kickstarter rewards to fulfill, and a couple of those were very challenging commission tracks. So I spent like another half a year just finishing those before I could jump onto another project. So it was weird, but no, it was weird. After I finished that, you know, it was a remix project, and I've been doing remixing for years and years, and that itch to do original game music. And I was really kind of feeling like I wanted to do a soundtrack. Just doesn't matter if it was indie or big or whatever. So I started kind of putting feelers out all over the place, checking in with different indie developers and some other folks I knew in the, you know, just from my fan base and whatnot, just kind of putting it out there like, hey, if you know anyone working on a new game or anything, I'd love to have a chance to take a crack at doing an original soundtrack. And I got a bite from Or Media, who was working on a game at the time, weirdly enough, called Maze Quest.
Oh, God.
I thought that was hilarious because it's like, Maze Dude. And
how does
Maze
that Quest, work really? Out?
Yeah. That, and I thought, I was like, is that really? Because it was the sequel. They had done Maze Quest 1 and they were working on number 2. And they were okay with the composer for the first game, but all the tracks were like super short, super repetitive. And I was going to bring more to the table. So we just started working on it, and that was a full-on like RPG, like a throwback to the 16-bit era a little bit, like kind of like Super Nintendo style fake orchestra, and really trying to hit the nails on the head with, like, you got the shop music, you got the battles, cavern, church themes, you know, different like top-down, what's the word I'm looking for, where you're looking down at the overworld, whatever, but so I got a chance to write a lot of classic type RPG themes. So I did that. And then actually just recently, a few weeks ago, actually a couple months ago now, released the soundtrack to Maze Quest 3. And the Maze Quest 3 is not out yet, but the music is out due to good old COVID. The final push for development got screwed up with developers having to shift their attentions elsewhere. So that's going to come out later, and they were going to have me hold on to the soundtrack until the game was done. But all things considered, they said, "Yeah, you can release it now." And that one was very different. Number two was RPG. Orchestral 3 was like Western. So it was this weird hybrid chiptune Western thing with like live guitar, banjo, and then 8-bit sounds. It was a very strange how it all came together.
How did you come to that sound?
Well, the Western thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, originally we had wanted to go full on, like as real as we could, get like live instruments, get real banjo, fiddles, harmonica, and just go fully orchestrated. But something I did on the second soundtrack that worked really well for me was drafting tunes in 8-bit. So I would use Nintendo sounds to just come up with the theme. So this way I'm not focused on samples, I'm not focused on effects, reverb, layers, I'm just focused on the notes. And I like working that way. So I would just draft that way and then orchestrate later. So I started to do that with number three, but then there were certain tracks where I was like, I can't quite get my idea across purely with 8-bit. So I started to layer in other, you know, actual orchestrated elements on top of it. So I'd have 8-bit elements and then a banjo and harmonica, 8-bit, and then add drums and Native American chanting. And then some were pure 8-bit and some were pure orchestrated because it just worked out that way to kind of get ideas across. And in a weird twist, the developers fell in love with the hybrid approach, which I was not expecting. And they came at me at one point and they're like, "Yeah, I think we're pretty much done." And I was like, "What? I'm not finished yet. I still got like 8 tracks that are purely chiptune, several that are like hybrid, and you like it?" So what had happened was that visually they were still trying to polish the graphic style, and they ended up going more retro than they had planned. So the visual style of the characters in the game ended up being more retro and actually fit the 8-bit music better than they had originally planned. So the hybrid approach actually worked. And it frankly saved me hours and hours and hours of orchestrating and producing. So I was not heartbroken to have them just approve it. It's like, "Okay, you're done. Forget those another 40 hours of work. You're all set." I'm like, "Okay.
Works for me. I'm good."
and you get paid the same. So, okay. Yeah, I'll do that.
Can't find much to complain about there, can you?
Yeah. Yeah. So, but that was that. And I'm working on a new original project now, which I could talk about unless you have more questions about the game stuff.
No, I was going to ask with Maze Quest, you have a composer's cut of the album available. What's the difference between the game soundtrack and the composer's cut?
Well, I have a tendency to fill my tracks with a lot of stuff, a lot going on, a lot of layers, and they're kind of busy. And that's kind of what happened here. The composer's cut has a lot of tracks that are a little more in your face, a lot more going on. And they asked me to basically tone it down. because it was too distracting.
Did you go too Maze Dude on them?
I did, and I've done this with lots of times. I've done this with music libraries before. They're like, "Dude, we like this track, but we can't use it in this commercial. It's too much going on." So I don't write simple very well. I write complex. I cram like a 10-minute track into 4 minutes, and then you listen again and again, and you hear more stuff. That's how I like to work. So, for example, our buddy Zyko, good old Waleed, played guitar. A lot of the tracks in my composer's cut ended up being in your face, grungy 8-bit, and then loud guitar on top fused together, and I loved it. But for the game, they're like, "This is too much. It's just too face, so please turn the guitar down, change the EQ on the square wave so they're less, so they don't hit you as hard." and there are just a few other like effects that I added in post-production, like some chorusing and some reverb and stuff that was just too much. So it's subtle, really, when you listen to the composer's cut next to the game version, unless you know what you're looking for. But if you do, you probably notice in the composer's cut, you hear a lot of like synth banjo. I didn't get real banjo in there, but there were some tracks that Waleed actually helped me sequence some pretty good fake banjo. And then in the game version, they didn't like that sound, so we went back to 8-bit for those. So a lot of little things like that. But frankly, it was a pain because I delivered the whole thing, and then I had to redo every single track on some level. And then I wasn't sure what to do. Do I just release the game version? Do I release both? So Bandcamp is going to be the only place that actually has both. The game version has just landed on Spotify, YouTube, Amazon, and a few other places. I haven't really talked about those publicly much yet because they misspelled Maze Quest. They added a space in there between Maze and Quest, and I'm trying to see if they can fix that or what the deal is. So if you go to Spotify today, you're going to see Maze Space Quest 3 soundtrack, and that's wrong.
I did see that. Yeah, I was actually sitting here looking at Spotify right now.
Why are you on Spotify? We're doing a show.
Because I was looking at his album list.
Sure.
I'm doing research so I can keep up with the conversation, because I don't know what the fuck we're talking about. We already covered that I am uncultured twat.
Well, Maze Quest 2 is actually a lot of fun. You can get it on your iOS or Steam. My daughter actually really enjoys the game. She's 7, and she's starting to get more and more adept at games that have more strategy, where you're actually upgrading your armor and your weapons and all that stuff. So it's kind of she can play level 1, and then once you get past that, it's a little overwhelming. But it's kind of funny that my kid's playing a video game on their iPad with music that I made. So that makes me pretty proud.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's even told people, my dad wrote this music. I'm like, thanks.
You wonder if those kids go home and they're like, this kid tried to tell me her dad wrote the music in a game she was playing. Kind of like how when we were kids, we'd be like, my uncle works at Nintendo, you know?
Yeah.
It's weird though, I'll be at a game store and I'll be talking to the clerk about something, and they'll bring up a game and the music, and I'll be like, yeah, my friend did the music for that. They're like, no, he didn't. It's yeah, I know Jake Kaufman. He's my friend. I've known him for 20 years now. It's no, you don't. You're full of shit. Okay.
Okay. Let me pull up a picture.
Think what you want. I've seen him throw up on people, so. MAGFest 1. You remember that, don't you, Chris? You were there.
I remember the concert. I remember hanging out with Jake. I don't remember the vomit.
Legend of Drunken Master. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds awful familiar. The early MAGFest days.
Early MAGFest days were the Wild West of insanity.
So that was the Wild West. What is the current? Is it San Francisco?
I guess so.
It's a good parallel there. But it's not. It's west, but it's not the same. I don't
know. Oh, man. I don't know. So, are you working on any other game soundtracks, or are you just working on this new Kickstarter project?
Just the new Kickstarter project. I'm trying to just do one project at a time, which is tricky. I mean, the idea for the one I'm working on right now, I had back in 2015 when I was working on American Pixels, and I felt like, okay, I like this new idea, but I can't jump on it yet. So I've been sitting on it for a while. And it was just recently I'm finally okay, now I can actually dive in and do this. So,
well, tell us, what is this new project of yours?
Yeah, so the new project is going to be original, not video gamey, although it is definitely going to be electronic. And in short, I am doing original music based on Bible verses. So you take a bit from scripture and you take, okay, what's the concept there? What's the theme? What is it trying to say? And then how would you say that with music? So a little abstract, very, very much like a composer-y idea, but it's one that stuck. You know, I was just sitting there thinking about, okay, I've honored American game composers. I've paid homages to trackers. I've, all these nostalgic pieces honoring games, but what would be something different? Could I do something that honors God? Can I do something that honors literature? And then it just hit. Take a Bible verse, compose it. And I was like, that's odd. So, and it stuck. You know, it's an idea that stuck and wouldn't let it go. And if an idea sticks, you got to make it happen.
Yeah.
I'm calling it a composing adventure because I'm actually very free in this project. I'm not tied down to something that I write has to match a level or a title screen or anything for a game. I can do whatever genres I want. So I'm starting to play with some pretty interesting fusion again, which is my world. but there's also this weird, tremendous responsibility where the source material is, it's holy. So whatever I write, it better be darn good and not mess it up. So I've been really taking my time getting there. I've been studying the verses that I've chosen. I've met with like church leaders about like just getting some additional teaching on what certain things mean. And it's been this whole, like all these weird layers to it, but I'm finally working on it. I'm finally composing. I got a solid start on 3 tracks, a fourth that's kind of okay. And
kind of okay.
Well, you know, when you have an idea and you sit and sometimes it comes out like in your head and sometimes it really doesn't. So that fourth one didn't come out right. I started it. Technically, I have a start on a fourth, but I'm going to throw it away. But, you know, the plan is to get a few tracks fully produced, get the live instruments there if I can afford it, and go to Kickstarter with a solid like 3 or 4 tracks to show off and then raise funding to complete the rest. And then just make it as big as it can be. But it's going to be a thing where I'm going to plan the budget in a way where if I get, you know, Kickstarter lets you do the thing where you can either go like all or nothing. You have to make your 100% and then that's it. Or you can just make it if you get 50%, you still finish it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm going to scale this thing up where if I get a little bit of money, okay, it works. I can synthesize and use it myself. But if I get a lot, great. Now I can bring in lots of live instruments, properly record things, pay for professional mixing and mastering, and really make it really, really solid. So I'm really just kind of leaving it to the interest level and see who likes it and who wants to support it. So I want to go big. I'd love to go big with this. And I'd love for it to be not just a single album, but kind of the start of many, where the website, wordsandversesproject.com, explains kind of like, you know, after, like, I'm doing this initial album and it's 12 tracks, 12 verses. The first album, I'm calling it Foundation. And I've chosen 12 verses from the Bible that are kind of like a good cross section of different themes, different ideals, Old and New Testament, different authors, and so on. But after this, you could easily pick a single theme, a principle. You know, forgiveness, battle, victory, abundance, prosperity, obedience, whatever, and easily grab several verses to transcribe into music and then make a whole album on a single theme. But once we get into that realm, I wouldn't want to just be the solo composer. It'd be nice if it gets to that level to have like a bunch where I'm more directing the thing and contributing tracks here and there, but there are several composers who like the idea and are contributing to the concept. And that is a very exciting idea where if it gets that big, it's not just an album. It's like a record label type deal, a new genre, you know, Christian electronic, which doesn't exist, you know? So I don't know. It's exciting. There's potential. And I'm trying to go into it with a mindset of happy with whatever. If it ends up being a single album that I launch and walk away from, okay. If it ends up being a big thing with a lot of funding and a lot of interest that can be scaled up, okay. I'll take that too. So we'll see.
So it's just kind of an open-ended project and you'll see how big it gets based on how much interest there is.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah. It's a funny thing. I compare it to, when I met my wife, I'll explain what I mean there. So when I was single, you know, you go out, you try to, you know, look for somebody. You're going out and you're looking for a date. You're looking for that. You meet someone and there's all these weird little, you get hung up on something. Like you meet someone, you get their phone number, you call, you leave a message, and then you're itching, you're waiting, and you're kind of like, I hope they call. And you get this weird nervousness. And every time there's that anxious nervousness, it never happened. It never took off. The next date sucked, whatever. But when I met my wife, there was this calm, this peace about it. And I met her and we had a great time on our first, when we met. She gave me her card, which I quickly pocketed, and I left with this kind of happy, kind of like, all right, I got her phone number. And I checked later, and it was just an email address. And I had to write the best email of my life, which I did. and she called me from that. So that's a whole other story. But the thing was, that night that I met her, I didn't walk away with this, oh, I hope she calls. There's more of a peaceful, like, wow, that was a great night. And if she calls and I see her again, that'd be nice. But if she doesn't, I had a great time. And that peace led me to a place where when she did reach out, my nerves and my anxiousness or whatever didn't affect it. It was all calm. So all that to say, what I'm working on right now, it's kind of like there's a weird piece about it because I'm not writing for a game. I'm not writing for a film. I'm not trying to please a director or even people. I just feel like this is something God told me to do. So I'm going to do it. And if it's a God project, it'll be successful. And if he wants to make it big, cool. And if he doesn't, okay, well, I finish this album and release it, and I can be, you know, I have inner peace that I did what I set out to do. Well, that's where I'm at.
That's a really cool project. I'll admit, I've known you for what, like 20 years now we've known each other, and I've never known you as an overly religious person. So I was kind of caught off guard when you announced this project, but it's cool to hear how intense and interested you are in making this a reality and getting this out to everyone to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a believer, but I mean, I got friends and colleagues in all spectrums of belief and different, you know, systems and stuff. And I try to be cool with everybody, but I also try not to be heavy handed or push anything. So I'm really not trying to push this as like a Christian music project. You know, if you're not into that world, that's fine. This is just going to be some awesome music based on some pretty epic material.
Yeah.
And, you know, and even if you think about it, no matter what your beliefs are, there is some powerful stuff in the Bible, and it's been used by lots of people for a lot of movie quotes, you know, death and hell are coming with me. Like there's quotes like in movies like Tombstone and Metallica has made songs based on biblical passages and other, you know, it's been used by as inspiration for lots of stuff that people didn't even realize. So I'm just doing that, but in my own way. And weirdly enough, before I dove in, I Googled it to see if anyone else had done this. And I couldn't find any. I couldn't find any like albums that were actually based on, you know, scripture verses. I found like a one-off here and there, or a lot of actual songs. There's a whole bunch of like praise and worship songs that are sung, and the lyrics are based on the words, but nothing like instrumentally, like abstract and deep, trying to get to the core concept. You know, so I think I'm the first person to do it to this scale.
So you're a pioneer. Weird enough,
yeah. Well, I've done it before, right?
Very true.
The American album, you know, pioneering a new type of remixing, different theme, focus. I mean, I like that.
It's an interesting concept beyond using like biblical scripture for inspiration. Did you pull from gospel songs or anything like that to use?
Well, here's the thing. I don't do well when I sit down to write a song.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm open to on this one is that if I compose something instrumental, but there's a riff in there or a bit that could be turned into a song, that maybe make like multiple versions of a track. So I could have the instrumental version, then I can have the version that we added lyrics to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also playing with drafting and chiptune format for these two. So there might be a chiptune release or, you know, so there could be multiple versions of each track. I'm still playing with that. But I'm not really trying to draw on songs or anything. I do have some other influences that I'm bringing to this. Mm-hmm. For example, the track I'm working on right now, it's based on John 14:2. And it's a verse that says, "In my Father's house are many mansions. Behold, I go and prepare a place for you. If it were not true, I would not tell you." So it was Jesus speaking to his disciples about heaven and how in heaven there are many mansions and everyone gets their own mansion. And it's a pretty darn cool, epic visual, right? Of just like sprawling heaven with these massive mansions everywhere. So musically, what I'm trying to get to is the best way I would explain it would be like SimCity in heaven. So you kind of have this music that is peaceful.
I can see it, yeah.
Yeah, like peaceful and beautiful, but there's this weird construction vibe. So it's moving, it's pulsing, you're building, you're creating, you're establishing dwelling places and everything. So there's this kind of industrial kind of construction thing, but also peaceful and calm. And I'm adding a Steve Reich influence, who does a lot of minimalism with like male instruments and stuff. So it's this kind of multiple combo, Steve Reich homage / heaven SimCity. So there's that. And then I like playing with numbers and math and weird time signatures. So the verse I'm referencing is 14:2, chapter 14, verse 2. So musically, I'm playing with 7/7 repeat twice. So 14:2. So it's a measure of seven beats, seven beats. You know what I mean? So I'm playing with stuff that amuses me that no one else might even notice. But having gone down that road, I'm establishing some pretty weird rhythms that I enjoy, and it kind of gives you a unique take on just you're not bobbing your head to a standard 4/4 beat or a 3/4 beat, but there's other stuff you're trying to figure out. What is that? Kind of like Sagat's theme from Street Fighter, where it's like, what is this? 11/5? Like, what is it? What am I hearing? You know? And anyone who's listened to my work for a while knows that I love playing with those weird time signatures. So the fact that I'm doing it with a reasoning behind it as to the numbers that were chosen and stuff, it's just subtle things that are giving me fuel to create too.
That is really awesome.
I really want to show off some works in progress too. They're not quite ready yet. I got three tracks. They're all chiptune based right now. But what I'm kind of discovering is that I don't know if I can draft a theme completely in chiptune or if I need to kind of just get out the raw ideas in chip format and then start orchestrating. Because what I have in my current track is a lot of great ideas, but they all happen way too quickly. So it's like, here's one idea, here's the next idea, here's the next idea, here's the next idea. And it's like, whoa, slow it down. But with purely chip sounds, it's really hard to add the ethereal essence to kind of stretch things out properly, or even the drums and the rhythms and stuff. So I'm probably going to have to quickly start orchestrating that one to really get it to where I need it to be, which I'm mixed about because I don't want to get hung up on samples and, you know, what drum to use until the notes are right.
Yeah.
But I think I've written enough notes to now I can start doing that. So I'm still trying to find that balance, but I will on the website and on social media. And this project, Words and Verses, does have its own Facebook page now, by the way. So I will be sharing works in progress as I'm able. I'm excited to, but I got to make sure that they're ready.
Anything we can preview on the show?
I'll think about it. I'm not sure. might be better off playing a Maze Quest 3 track because those are done.
Well, chances are I played a Maze Quest 3 track to lead into the interview, so I could play one after as well.
All right. Well, I'll consider it as long as we preface that if you do play it, that it is going to be very raw and early in development. So
it'll be a sneak preview if you're comfortable with it.
I could send you part of what I'm working on now. Sure.
That'd be cool.
And your audience would be literally the first to hear it because I haven't posted anywhere or anything. So you'd
world be premiere. World premiere on SML. So stay tuned at the end of the episode.
Yeah, world premiere, John 14.2, chiptune draft.
We're going to have to get the splash screen they use for the Xbox.
The world premiere.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be curious to know what you think, too, because it's composing for, again, it's not a game, it's not a remix, it's not for a music library, but it is definitely music with a purpose. And part of the thought process is, like, what if people hear this music and like it, but then wonder if the track title is Genesis 1 verse 2, well, what the heck does that say? So now someone who's never opened a Bible before is checking to see what it says, and who knows, that could be the spark of, you know, I want to see what else this chapter has to say. And, you know, I don't know.
You might enlighten some people to convert to, you know, reading the Bible and changing their way of life. You might be the positive catalyst in somebody's life with this album.
That'd be great. We'll see.
So are you going to be doing all instrumental stuff, or are you going to be doing lyrical stuff as well on here?
I'm starting with instrumental and lyrical. If lyrical flows, I do already have some singers who said they would be happy to hop on it, but I'm not going to set out to write songs. If it happened, great, but I'm not going to try to write a song. So, but if there's a hook that I do in the instrumental, like, man, that's catchy, I can add words to it, then we'll see what happens. I mean, right now there's a lot of stuff that is a lot of, you know, wait and see.
Yeah. Still early. Still, how long do you think it's going to be until the Kickstarter is ready?
I'm looking at the end of October.
End of October. And how the Kickstarters go, what, a month?
Yeah.
How long after the Kickstarter do you think the project would be ready? About a year, 2 years?
Probably 2 years, I'm guessing, given the scope I have in my head and the number of instruments I want to bring in and record. I mean, because we got to develop sheet music. You know, I mean, American Pixels, I did a lot of long distance, kind of having other people record their stuff and send it to me, which... with some cases work great and some not so much because I didn't get to direct. And so I probably want to do more local musicians this time, which means I can be in the studio and I can actually direct and get them to retake as needed. But that's a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
Oh, versus having, you know, some of my online buddies who will record for me for free and shoot me a WAV file. But I can't really be there to when they record it. So it's a trade-off, you know?
You can't zoom in and do a conference call with them while they perform? It's like, I mean, no, do it better.
I might be able to now, but a few years ago, that was not really a thing that we thought of, or it just didn't work out timing wise. They booked a studio for 1 o'clock on a certain weekday and I was working, so I couldn't really, you know, chime in.
Yeah.
Plus I hadn't done it before, so I didn't know what to expect. And I think I was optimistic that everything would be perfect. And when I got back, well, a lot of times it was really well performed, but I had to do a lot of post-production to get the timing right and get certain aspects right. And, it was just, I would do it different moving forward. So I've learned, and now it'll be a different approach.
Well, you're going to be on Kickstarter. One of the things with Kickstarter is having cool backer rewards and tiers. Do you have any ideas in mind for anything you might do with Kickstarter rewards?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I would do anything like visually, like art wise or anything.
Maze Dude plushie, maybe.
Well, one thing I did with American Pixels was the whole commissioner remix. And that was pretty high level, but you could actually request and, you know, based on this reward, say, remix that song, and I'd have to do it. And a few people bite on that, including DJ Pretzel from OC Remix.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah. He requested a track from Comics Zone, and that was one of the post releases that I did, and it was hard. It was challenging to make that one work, but it was fun. So here I'm thinking request a verse. So if you really want to go in and pitch at a high level, you can actually request a Bible verse that I would then be obligated to compose the track to after the initial album release. So that's one idea. I'm still working on the others.
That'd be cool.
In fact, too, I actually have had three composers so far, other composers from film and games and stuff, tell me that moving forward, if I do start like a second album down the line, they would be happy to contribute. So it's already it's already getting some interest. And which is, you know, that's a whole other thing, because then I'm wrangling multiple composers with different styles, different skill levels, different backgrounds. And how do you put all of them into a cohesive album? Kind of like putting a Bad Dudes album together. We all sound pretty different. So for it to work as a single album is, you know, there's its challenges, but also it's thrills, because you get a lot of different flavors in one thing. So we'll see.
I miss the Bad Dudes. You should hit up Mustin and get the Bad Dudes back together for something.
I've thought about that, because there's no shortage of ideas for albums we could do. It's just we're all busy now, and a lot of people don't really do much music these days. But
yeah,
some people do lots of it. So
we've all grown up. We all have lives and things to do, and I have an awful podcast to run. So that's why I'm looking for music. I just want music to play on the show so I don't have to go digging for stuff.
Well, despite all those who've fallen off, I'm still making stuff. So, you know.
And your stuff is still awesome. I've been listening to your music for so long now, and it is still top tier quality. You are just so unique with your style and so inventive with the instruments you use and the samples you use. It is just always a pleasure to hear you release something new, because it's going to sound different from anything out there.
And often anything I've ever done before myself.
Yes.
Because I get bored easily. I don't like doing the same thing twice.
What was the style for that comeback remix you did all those years ago?
Well, I made a joke Caribbean one time that, Caribbean death metal with bagpipes.
Caribbean with bagpipes.
Said, okay, do it. And I was like, well, so it was more of a Caribbean synth funk with bagpipes. It was fun.
That's good stuff. All those years ago. Memories.
Oh, yeah.
So what are you playing these days? What kind of games are you playing?
Well, I got my PS4, which I'm chipping away at Outer Worlds. I don't know if you've played that one. It's kind of like Fallout in space.
Mm-hmm.
It's so-so, but partway through that, I put that down and picked up Infamous Second Son again, because I love that game. Also great music. So I've been kind of playing that one in the evenings, and it's been a weird groove we've been in, you know, during quarantine, because I am working and helping my daughter homeschool at the same time. She gets classes like through her iPad, but she still needs help. And then when I'm done with work, it's kind of like family time. So we hang out, you know, me, my wife, and my daughter, and we got games that we play together, and we play outside, and then it's her bedtime, and then my wife wants to hang out, so we watch a show or something, and then it's like 10 o'clock at night, now it's me time. And I'm exhausted. So if I have any energy at that point, now it's like, okay, now I can play a game for half an hour before I drop. Or compose a little bit if you're really saucy.
If you're feeling saucy.
Yeah, it's like, I've been going all day, but I'm going to write some music. And that's rare. Usually I try to get like a morning or a weekend where I can really sit down and write, but tough. Like you said, we're busy.
Yeah.
Jobs and responsibilities and what have you. And, you know, it's, you know, I got a pretty demanding full day job too. I mean, I'm working on a telehealth system given COVID. I'm building a system where it's video conferencing slash hearing test at the same time. So you can actually do a full on hearing test and get an audiogram through this digital tool that I'm building. So during the day, I'm changing the hearing healthcare industry. And then at night, if I have time left, I'm pioneering a new style of music. So
that's crazy. You're a man of many hats.
Yeah. And I'm a fun dad, and, you know, but yeah, so playing games, I'm not doing a ton. I did introduce my daughter to Plants vs. Zombies recently, and she fell in love with that. And we had fun playing that together. Like, I would take a level, she'd take a level. That's fun.
How old is your daughter now?
She's 7. She's just finishing first grade this month.
Oh, growing up so quick.
here's a funny story. Maze Dude. I got that moniker because I used to make mazes back when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. So we have a pretty good sized driveway. So we've been making mazes out of chalk. And so I would make a maze for her to try and navigate. And then tonight we got out there because we actually had some good weather, and I made her a couple mazes. And then she's like, okay, I'm going to make one. So I'm sitting there watching my 7-year-old make a maze. And I'm just like, that's my kid.
like father, like daughter, right?
Yep. Maze daughter.
Maze girl. I don't know. Maze dudette.
Yeah, but you know, I'm proud. But it's funny. I mean, she and I mean, we play a lot together. I can play. I can tap into imagination. I can tap into this massive epic story out of stuffed animals. I can do that. My wife can't. She's tried. She just doesn't have it in her. And she just like 5 minutes, and she's like, I'm done. I can't follow what you guys are doing. So, I end up, you know, my daughter and I, we play a ton. So she's just she's all about daddy. Happen to that, and you know, have fun. And it's been even more with me being home more. So
So how is COVID impacting you? Is it affecting your work at all, or because you do so much work from home, it just doesn't have much of an effect on you?
Very little effect for me, honestly. And I'm incredibly blessed and thankful to say that. The company I work for has had to do with some furloughs, where a lot of people were kind of like on 1 week, off a week, and so on. I was lucky enough where I was furloughed for a week in April and a week in May, and that's it. And I thought those weeks were going to be like, all right, I'm going to do a lot of composing and catch up on all these other projects. And instead it was more like, I don't want to be at a computer. I want to do house stuff. So I was actually doing like landscaping and gardening and like fixing stuff in my house. It was broken. And then next thing you know, the week's gone. Darn.
Yeah. It keeps you busy.
Yeah. So, I mean, plus, you know, as Cole stated, creative people don't get bored. You always have ideas. You have, you know, another project to build or something. So it's not, I haven't been sitting around in fear. I haven't been sitting around bored, anxious, trying to figure out what to do. I'm busy. So, you know, I'm just thankful for that.
Very awesome. Well, I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about before we wrap up the show?
I can't think of much. I don't think so. Just regards to COVID, if everyone's listening to this, just be calm. You know, don't let fear get the best of you. Just be calm. We're going to get through this. And I guess just to plug my project again, check out wordsandversesproject.com. Check out the Facebook page. Stay tuned for more news and updates. I actually just got interviewed for CNY Alive, which is a Syracuse-based publication about what's going on with the arts in our town. So I got to answer some questions about that. So that's a story. You know, it's pretty good.
And where else could people keep up to date with what you're doing?
MazeDude.com. I'm trying to keep that up to date. Ironically, as a web developer, I don't give my own personal site as much attention as it needs. I try to keep it up to date, and you can check out, you know, if you're hearing this and you don't know my work, I got hours and hours of music you can listen to there for free. I got a Bandcamp page. I'm on a lot of the standard streaming platforms of Amazon, Spotify, all that fun stuff. So check it out.
Just search Maze Dude and we'll find you, right?
Yeah, I'm the only Maze Dude in the world, so I picked a good name. And indeed. I think I'm going to start uploading some of my old mazes from when I was a teenager to Facebook just for fun. Just because, like, you know what? Maybe someone will want to print these out and try them, because they're actually pretty ridiculous. They're hard. Like, they're like small spaces.
I want to see one.
Keeping out for those. I have one that I did called the Human Brain, and it's like curly brain type stuff. And it's a ridiculous maze. So
so cool.
I'll upload those shortly. Maybe the picture of my daughter in the driveway making a maze too.
Nice. All right. Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on, chatting with us. It is always a pleasure having you on here. Again, music at the end. We're going to play something from you. I'm not sure what it's going to be, but it's going to be something Maze Dude related. Anything you could tell us about it?
It's going to be weird time signatures again.
Obviously. It's you, yeah, so it's going to be weird.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm going to send you the track from John 14:2, because that's probably the one that's farthest along.
And what are the themes of that one again?
Mansions in heaven.
Nice. Nice, nice, nice. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on, chatting with us. Thanks again to everyone who was on this episode. It's been a long one, so thank you for hanging out and keeping us company. Maze Dude, do you have any final words to end the show?
Enjoy your summer. Get creative, even if things are closed. Make it fun.
What?